Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the April 18th, 2017 regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please take your seats and refrain from conversations.
I didn't know this was your seat.
Let's take our seats, please.
Oh, okay. That's what I get for not reading.
A couple of housekeeping things. If you have cell phones or other electronic devices, please silence them. If there's an emergency, the exits are to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. In case of a fire, please do not use the elevator. We've got a public hearing first, which does not require the blue cards, but we have privilege of the floor. If you want to speak on that, we would ask you to sign a blue card and pass it forward. They're in the back of the room. The first thing we'll be doing tonight is a public hearing. I'll read the notice. A public hearing will be held by the Tompkins County Legislature at 5:30 p.m. in the legislature chambers concerning Local Law B of 2017, a local law raising the legal age to 21 for tobacco sale and purchase. And I actually had a couple of blue cards from people who signed up, I think, for that. Faye Gugakis, did you want to speak? And try to limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Can you warn me when I'm up to two? There's the clock.
We can time it.
Yep. Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. happy spring. I am here to... I'm sorry, haven't done this in a while, to agree with the age increase of 21. I don't smoke, but I am very concerned about, you know, people being addicted to cigarettes. They're not healthy, except for, I guess, ones that don't have the additives that are really bad in them. I tell people that... Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm not doing well today, so I'm not starting out well.
Take your time.
I support the age increase. With that, I highly recommend that we do educational outreach to young people because it's not enough to just raise it. We need to follow it up, and I think the tobacco company has given us money, and we need to put that money to work. And by doing that, we need to educate our youth. We need to educate our youth on so many things, including cell phone use and texting, which is rampant. I mean, they're biking with and doing that. But going back to that, I'll come back another day for that. But the thing that I wanted to say, and so I don't forget, because I'm dealing with some health issues, so I'm a little distracted. I do not feel, and I've said this many, many times to the city of Ithaca, that all these head shops, if you call them, on the commons, we've got, what, 7 of them? That sends a message to our young people. You know, you go by, and there's paraphernalia right there. So what does that say? You know, so it's a cumulative thing. Am I making sense? I don't know. 57 minutes. Education and the community coming together as a whole, you know, not one segment saying, well, we don't agree with this, or, you know, of course you can't make everybody agree with the same thing either. But what I'm trying to say is we have to come together as a community and say this is not healthy. What I wanted to say with the other kinds of cigarettes is the conventional cigarettes have a lot of toxic stuff in them, you know, and that's what's being sold to the kids. And the tobacco companies are known to target kids. They're going after the young people all over the world because the older people are getting the idea that it causes cancer. So, and it's not just cigarettes. It's other drugs that we're dealing with, right? So all the drugs, as well as the cigarettes, that goes to education, just like kids need to be educated on sexuality issues, you know, getting pregnant or diseases. You know, education is so important, and I'm ending, and that needs to happen at a young age, whether it's saving the earth or health or cigarettes or whatever. I'm sorry I went on. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Deborah Menendez.
Good evening. My name is Deb Menzeff, and I am the coordinator of the CNY Regional Center for Tobacco Health Systems at St. Joseph's Health in Syracuse, where we provide free support and technical assistance to local health care and mental health care providers in Tompkins County to help them treat tobacco dependence. I'm here today to show support for increasing the purchase age of tobacco to 21. The U.S. Surgeon General has called youth smoking a pediatric epidemic. Right here in Tompkins County, 10% of our youth currently smoke in the past year, and the average age of initiation is 12 years old. You know that using tobacco at a young age not only has an impact on the development of a young person, but it increases the likelihood that they will use and abuse other drugs in the future. On a daily basis, I work with providers right here in Tompkins County that are struggling with the challenges of treating a tobacco user. Nearly 7 out of 10 smokers want to quit. The good news with that is that they want to quit. However, the challenge comes with actually quitting. On average, it takes 30 quit attempts to become tobacco free. So year after year, time after time, they continue to succumb to these products. The New York State Smokers Quit Line data for Tompkins County shows us that the majority of callers are between the ages, are 45 and older. They smoke between 10 to 29 cigarettes a day and have done so for over 21 years. They make less than $30,000 annually, have a high school degree or less, and are suffering from a mental health condition or a smoking-related chronic disease. This is a vulnerable population who started at a very young age, are suffering both mentally and physically. The U.S. Surgeon General predicts that if usage rates continue as they are, 5.6 million children alive today under the age of 18 will die prematurely from smoking. That equals 1 out of 13 children. As a mother and a community member, this is terrifying to me. It is my hope that no one in this room has had to experience or will experience a personal loss from tobacco. While you may hear opposition related to adopting a Tobacco 21 law, please remember the pain, suffering, and debilitating impact of tobacco products on the human life. The years of battling the addiction, those suffering from a tobacco-related illness, those who have lost their life or a loved one from tobacco, and more important, the manipulative strategies of the tobacco industry to get these individuals hooked at such a young age. Tobacco 21 is one way that we can protect our youth and their health not only today but for future generations. Young people who are vital members of our community are often growing up in an environment where tobacco use is a household norm. These young people deserve our support and prevention efforts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. There are a couple chairs over here on my right. I have Samantha Hilson.
Hi, Samantha Hilson, and I'm a resident of the city and director of health promotion at the Tompkins County Health Department.
Can you get closer to the mic, please?
Oh, sorry. I urge the legislature to vote in favor of the proposed T21 bill to keep our young people healthy, active, and safe, and protect the broader public health. If young people avoid tobacco, most will never start. The 2012 Surgeon General's report states that almost 90% of smokers in the U.S. began smoking before the age of 21 years. Research has proven that young brains have a higher susceptibility to nicotine addiction, and therefore individuals who start smoking at a young age are more likely to become addicted and become lifetime users of tobacco products. We know the many dangers of tobacco use and negative health consequences that may affect people years later and will likely cut their life short. But young people don't always think about how choices that they make today will have repercussions in the future. Young people ask older individuals to buy cigarettes and other tobacco products. Many 18-year-olds are still in high school and can legally purchase tobacco products, whereas there are fewer 21-year-olds interacting with this vulnerable population. Young people are drawn to the appeal of tobacco marketing. The tobacco industry knows that early tobacco initiation leads to addiction that will fuel long-term use and purchasing of tobacco products. Raising the minimum age for tobacco sales to 21 makes public health and ethical sense with a focus on prevention, and I hope that the legislature chooses to lead the state in voting for T21. Thank you.
We have Ann Corman. Ann, you've got tobacco and another issue. Is that to be, we maybe would have you later on privilege of the floor, but this is the public hearing on tobacco at this point. If you'd like to speak to that, we'd be glad to have you do that.
Okay, sure.
Excuse me.
Thank you. I'm Ann Corman from the town of Ulysses, and my mother died from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and she started smoking when she was about 14. I started smoking when I was about 16 because there were people around me. They were 18 or 19. One was my brother and gave me cigarettes. And later on when I tried to quit, when I was around 20, 21, 22, when I realized what I was doing to myself, it was very hard because it was very addicting. And I find myself to be a very strong-willed person that if I decide to do something, I'm going to do it. And it took me 3 years to quit over and over again. It was very hard. So I think raising the age to 21 is something that I'm hoping that we pass here today. Just as alcohol, we know that's also a very dangerous drug, and we don't let people buy that until they're 21. So if we were to do this all again, say tobacco wasn't on the market and we were to introduce it today, I don't think we would want young kids to have it. So thank you.
Thank you. Just trying to read this one. I think it's Joseph Prusch.
Thank you. I already know the makeup of our community, and I don't want to be misunderstood. I am against the idea of raising the age to 21 for tobacco sales, not because I'm against stopping tobacco use in underage people. But the problem is that the average age of starting smoking is 13. So we need solutions that are actually going to target those children who are starting at those ages. And I think one of the big things that you can do as a legislature is create regulations that protect working single parents. I had to take off work to come here to this meeting. I understand it's traditional to have the meeting at 5 o'clock because most of you work a regular first shift job. A lot of the parents of children who are starting to sneak cigarettes and packs of cigarettes from them are working 2 to 5 jobs in order to be able to afford to live in this county. There are bigger social problems here than just the cigarettes. So that's the target of what I'm trying to say. You know, there's a sense that age restriction creates fetishization, that as a teenager, if you smoke cigarettes, you're going to feel more like an adult, and that maybe adults will respect you more because you're smoking. That's misleading, of course, but, you know, again, if mom and dad have to spend all that time outside of home working instead of making dinner for you and talking with you like I did for my own, you know, it's hard for them to develop a sense of self-esteem in order to protect them from starting smoking and starting drinking and starting other habits. So, you know, I respect the positive intention here. I just don't think it's the adequate solution. We can look to the South, where there are dry counties where alcohol is not sold. And what happens? People get in the car, you know, once every few weeks. They drive to a neighboring county and they purchase it. So one of the consequences here is that maybe the Mecklenburg General Store will get reopened as a tobacco haven. And you'll see a lot of teenagers driving to Mecklenburg in order to buy their cigarettes. Or maybe Richford. Is that really what we want to do? Is that really going to solve the problem, or is it just going to make further problems? You can also look at that situation with alcohol consumption and alcohol fatalities in developed countries of Europe. Countries that have higher rates of alcohol fatalities also generally have a higher drinking age. Russia has a drinking age of 21 and ranks in the top 10. Hungary, Moldavia, one of the rare exceptions is Andorra. But then you look on the other spectrum, countries like Holland, they have a drinking age of 16. They have half the alcohol fatalities per million citizens that we do in the United States. You can look at Germany. The drinking age is 14 in Germany. Admittedly, the alcohol fatality rate is higher in Germany, but that's because of other social problems. In any event, just raising the age to 21 is not going to stop the problems. We have to look at things like creating jobs here, working jobs, having a living wage law, controlling the expensive rents in Tompkins County. And those are things that you can do as a legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the cards I have about tobacco, but anyone else who would like to speak on the issue of at the public hearing about the T21 law, please go to the microphone and tell us your name and your municipality, please. Anyone want to speak? Go ahead.
Sure. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Bergman. I'm from the town of Ithaca. I kind of agree with a combination of what everybody has said, and definitely with this last gentleman, excuse me. The age is 13, and it is the most addictive age for these children. It becomes part of them. So that's a problem right there. I do want to ask that you do some further research on this, and I'd like to know where we're at with the November 2016 law to stop smoking in HUD and public housing, because that is a major issue. Smoking is definitely on a lower income status, where it is much higher than it is with a higher income status. So the individuals that are having in their home heavily are going to be more likely to smoke. They're also going to be more likely to be able to get them freely from parents. That's a major concern. So I'd like you to look into it more about the research. I'm concerned that if you now have addicted children, 13, 16, young, and they're already addicted, and then 18 is going to be a problem, because now you have addicted young adults, I guess. I'm concerned that it'll start like a bootlegging thing with cigarettes in this area, selling them to children. And I think that will cause more criminal issues and more maybe possible violent issues once someone's addicted. So I really agree with everyone said as far as this is a huge concern for our children. But I think more research is needed to be done. I don't think the 18 is age to 21 is really going to be that effective. It's the lower education levels that we need, and with parents, stopping the smoking in should be in any home, personally, but the public housing, which is now law, and I would like to see that happen. I'd like a definite evaluation of third-party, secondhand smoke. I mean, my son's a severe asthmatic. He goes to school, kids smell of it. That's an allergic reaction, and right triggers an asthmatic attack. Nothing's been done about secondhand smoke. I mean, he goes through it every day at school. And it's on children, it's on their clothing, it's in their hair. So, I mean, I just would like to see some further research on this issue before deciding that this 18 to 21 is going to fix it, because it's not. Thank you.
Others who would like to speak at the public hearing? Please tell us your name and your municipality.
Dwight Mengel, City of Ithaca. I completely acknowledge and affirm the all the hazards relative to smoking at whatever age. I understand that. I also understand, as I was sitting here, I remember when I turned 18. It was the last year. My friends who are a year older were the last ones who were drafted into the military to go to Vietnam. That was also the time when the 18-year-olds got the right to vote. And as you know, 18-year-olds can sign contracts. And 18-year-olds at that time could drink. And 18-year-olds could buy cigarettes. And I wonder what we ask of our 18-year-olds. They graduate from high school. They can either go on, they can pursue other occupations, they can go and fight in the military. And I really want us to think about, what does this coming to an age of adulthood mean? And I think it means being able to exercise choices, even really wrong choices and even really bad choices, but to be able to exercise choice. And I think that's where I've never smoked. But I respect a choice And if we've seen, if we've said for all these other things it's 18, I think it should be 18. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Please state your name and your municipality.
My name is Michael Frenier. I'm the president of the New York State Vapors Association, as well as the general manager of Unique E-Cigs, an employer in this county. And I would like to also voice our concern about changing the age from 18 to 21. The way the laws are written in New York, changing it from 18 to 21 is only on purchase. It's not on consumption. Unlike alcohol, you have to be 21 to consume. In New York, you have to be 18 to buy cigarettes, but you can consume them as low as 15, 14. The police can't take it away because it's not illegal to consume it. It's only illegal to buy it. So changing the age isn't going to change anything. And with respect to being 18, you know, these we as well, and I share this gentleman's thoughts. At 18, we're believed to be adults. We do something egregious, we can be charged as an adult. We can sign up and go into the military, go overseas to protect our rights, catch a bullet and die at the age of 18. But yet our counties throughout the state are saying at 18, you're not old enough to make an adult decision. So we need to understand that. Besides that, the stats that are out show teenage smoking in itself is lower than since they've been keeping stats. With the vaping industry as it has developed across the world, you have the largest quit smoking campaign going on in the world at no expense to the taxpayers. Smoking itself, the nicotine, it's not a carcinogen, it's a stimulant, very similar to caffeine. It's when you light up that cigarette where all the dangers come. You know, there's no, we don't hear anything out there about going after the tobacco industries on the thousands of chemicals they put into these cigarettes. But yet there's only 3 to 4 ingredients that are in vaping liquid. If you are eating table food, you will test positive for nicotine. It's in potatoes, tomatoes, cauliflower, eggplant. There's nobody gorging themselves to death on these vegetables. So with a traditional cigarette, your vape shops and so forth are really trying to get people away from cigarettes. But it's consuming a real tobacco cigarette is where the dangers lie. And that's where the focus should be. Changing the age, that's all you're going to do is entice these teenagers to go out and do something they can't. So I think you really need to look at the science. We're willing to leave a packet for you to review if anybody would like it.
We're happy to receive that.
All right, thank you. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer any of them. But really, truly, look at the science. Look at who produces the science. You know, there's associations out there that are heavily funded by big pharma or even big tobacco. The vaping industry is not big tobacco. It is not. You know, if you look at even their pharmaceutical FDA-approved smoking cessations, they're killing people. They can't even make a drug to get you off cigarettes without killing you. You know, the one Chantix, it's associated to over 500 suicides. Thousands and thousands of bodily harm. So when we turn around and make a comment, you know, it's not FDA approved, let me remind you, cigarettes are not FDA approved either. But they're sold across the nation. So changing the age, a lot more consideration has to be made because your ultimate effect of trying to get teenagers or young adults from smoking is going to have an opposite effect on you. Because when the kids find out they can't do this, they're more enticed to go try it anyway. So thank you.
Thank you. Others who would like to speak? Again, we're on the public hearing on the Tobacco 21 law, raising the age. Anyone else like to speak on the public hearing? Yes, sir. Please state your name and your municipality.
Hi, Don. My name is Charles McAvoy. I'm actually from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. A couple years ago, I decided to invest into the downtown Ithaca with my business, Hetty's Pipe Shop. A couple years ago, when vapes hit the market, I myself was a cigarette smoker, and I quit cigarettes using vapes. Presently, today, I am down to zero nicotine e-liquid, and I left my vape at home. I don't have to carry it around with me. I'm not chained to it. Today, we are discussing something that's going to be a very major change that, frankly, a woman spoke before and said it's going to increase the black market. What's going to happen when everybody, there's about 25,000 18 to 20-year-olds in this county. What happens when they decide to spend their revenue in the next county over that's 18-plus? What about all the businesses in this area that depend on the college population that's 18 to 20, which is a majority of the population? I'm concerned with becoming a nanny state in a technical, open-minded, freedom of expression society becomes where do we draw the line? We know that alcohol, for example, is really well, you know, done in the commons, and at 21, all the 21-year-olds are so, you know, mature when they drink, and they don't cause any problems whatsoever. So what's the next meeting? Are we going to go ahead and raise the drinking age to 30? I think we have to understand that when you hit 18 years old and when you're able to fight for the country, pay your taxes, go to jail, sign contracts like the last gentleman said, we have to take into consideration that we are putting an undue responsibility on our law enforcement, on our young children that will be hit by the black market, where a drug dealer doesn't have to card, where you have to get carded at the convenience stores. Right now, I was at the Commons when they put the smoking ban in effect. I don't see anybody smoking cigarettes. When I talked to my younger customers and I say to them, hey, what do you guys think about this 18 to 20-year-old ban on buying cigarettes? And every one of them are like, oh, we agree with that. Cigarettes are bad. And then I go, well, that also includes other tobacco products such as vaping. What? Hell no. That's the response I get. I think we have to start treating our young people as adults. We have to use moderation campaigns and try to teach people the dangers of smoking so they can make a decision on their own. If they don't make the decision, they'll go behind our backs and make the bad decisions that we don't want them to do anyways, and in the process lose revenue, lose businesses. How many chains that sell tobacco products want to come into the county when they know there's a restriction to 21? This is a pure business model for me. I invested $200,000 just recently and signed 2 5-year contracts on the Commons. And to find out about this was very disheartening. I totally agree with cigarettes being bad for you. I totally agree with that. But I think that we have to let the young people that are 18 years old to 20 make these decisions on their own and not have their parents become their second parents, the government. Thank you.
Others who would like to speak on the public hearing on the tobacco law, please come to the microphone and state your name and your municipality. Dr. Klapak.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm speaking for myself as a practicing family physician here in the county and also as a medical director of the Tompkins County Health Department.
Can you tip the microphone up just a little?
I was wondering if it is this better?
Yes.
Good. I was saying I'm speaking on behalf of the Tompkins County Health Department and also as a practicing family physician. I think you either have before you or you will have some written comments from Frank Krupa, and so I won't attempt to repeat those verbally that he has provided for you written down. But what I do want to say is that the New York State Academy of Family Physicians has weighed in on this very issue, and I would like to share with you what the Academy in this state is saying, and I can provide you a written copy. Excuse me, I walked up the stairs and I'm a little... So the New York State Academy represents in excess of 6,000 family physicians and residents across the state of New York in all communities. This statement, which is a memorandum from the Academy, states that exposure to tobacco while brain development is still occurring has long-term detrimental effects on cognitive functioning. An adolescent brain is far more susceptible to the addictive nature of nicotine, which has lifelong negative health effects, including heart disease, stroke, and lung cancer. The New England Journal of Medicine reports that 95% of adult smokers begin before 21. In fact, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the median age at which a person in the United States becomes a daily smoker is 17. Nationally, there are about 500,000 smoking-related deaths, with nearly 26,000 in New York State per year, making youth prevention of smoking a key public health priority. It is proven that raising the age reduces smoking rates among high school students. In 2005, Needham, Massachusetts, was the first town in the United States to raise the age to 21. From 2005 to 2010, the high school smoking rate in that community dropped from 12.9% to 6.7%, with recorded decreases reported in neighboring communities as well. Currently, 90% of those who make tobacco available to minors are under the age of 21. Raising the age to 21 drastically decreases the opportunity for 18-year-old high schoolers to supply younger students with tobacco products. 21-year-olds are far less likely to interact with high school students, which eliminates many young people's initiation to cigarettes. When the drinking age was raised from 18 to 21 in the 1980s, there were national decreases in overall consumption of alcohol, drunk driving, and motor vehicle accidents among young people. Raising the legal age for alcohol use has proven to be an effective method of decreasing consumption of a harmful substance for young adults, serving as further evidence that a similar law for tobacco products would be just as successful. There is already momentum in this regard. So far in New York State, 7 counties, as well as New York City, have raised the age to purchase tobacco products. Certainly if you had questions about that statement, I'd be glad to answer them, but I think it speaks for itself. And to whom may I provide the written copy?
Pass it up. We'll take it to the clerk here. Thank you, Dr. Klapek. Others who'd like to speak?
I have one clarification question I'd like to ask the doctor.
Well, we don't get into that. You can sit and talk to him privately if you'd like, but we don't get into that on the floor.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Just kind of more of a personal account.
Go to a microphone. Please state your name and your municipality.
My name is Coleman Free. I live up in Shermansburg, and I work down here at Hetty's Pipe and Vape. This is more of a personal account to my experience with vaping and kind of how it changed my life. I grew up deep south where tobacco is easily accessible, even at an underage standpoint. I grew up, my father chewed tobacco, my grandfather smoked cigars, et cetera, et cetera. It's been in my life as long as I can remember. When I was 16, I started smoking cigarettes, and this is while I lived down south. Only recently did I move up north to New York when my dad's job changed. So I smoked for 2-3 years before I switched over, and when I switched over to vaping, I found that I had a higher lung capacity. I could go play sports and not feel terrible. My days felt brighter, you know. I felt, as I was smoking cigarettes, that I just felt trashy all the time. So as it stands now, and I don't know all the small areas in the bill that's going through, but from what I understand, I would lose my job as a 19-year-old at Eddie's Pipe and Vape if this went through. And I would also not be able to use the vape products. Now, I've gotten myself off of nicotine using these products. I currently use 0-milligram juice. So just as a personal experience, I find that vaping is way better for you. You'll feel better after using it from going from cigarettes. By the time I switched over, I was smoking about a pack a day, and I just felt way better. It also left me with more money to do other things I enjoy, like camping and backpacking and et cetera. But, you know, that's just my personal experience with the product, so.
Thank you, sir. Others who'd like to speak?
Mike, no, I don't want to speak. I just want to let people know if they have additional materials or questions, mostly materials, that they didn't have a chance to get to today, where they can send them that would be distributed to all of us.
Send them right here to the Tompkins County Legislature, and we're at 121 East Court Street.
Or legislature at tompkins-co.org.
They can certainly do that on the web or on to an email, of course. Thank you, Carol. All right, unless there's anyone else, I have a hand up. Go ahead. Please state your name and your municipality.
Good evening. My name is Ellen Walsh, and I'm from Danby. I don't know that I 100% agree with the idea of raising the age for purchase of tobacco products to 21, simply because I don't know that it would be effective. Having grown up in a rural area where tobacco use is very common, I don't think that a purchase age necessarily makes all of the difference when it comes to the accessibility of tobacco products. However, I did actually come up not so much to address that, but to address some things that were said that were not quite correct. While it is true that there is nicotine in certain vegetables, usually vegetables from the nightshade family, absorption into your body is not the same when you ingest it versus when you inhale it and smoke it. So I can't speak to specifically how it's absorbed differently, but it doesn't affect your brain the same way. And I think that it's important that that be addressed, because I would hate for there to be any confusion on that matter. I do think that we need to address the fact that 13-year-olds are smoking and using tobacco products. I think that if you have the ability, we need to either put pressure on the state or make a law in the county that addresses actually having tobacco products on your person and using them as opposed to being able to purchase them. I think that that would go a lot farther to change young people using tobacco products. And as the parent of two very small children, that's very important to me. And as the daughter of a pulmonologist, that's really, really important to me. I grew up with pictures of black lungs, and if you do this, I will put your head on a stake in the yard. So this is a very serious issue. And so many preventable diseases that we as taxpayers then end up paying for. So I really appreciate the efforts of this body to address that issue. And I think maybe, as opposed to raising the age, maybe look in the other direction and look at younger people and look at what we can do to address the fact that they have access to these products when they really shouldn't. Thank you.
Thank you. Last call. Anyone else? All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. Thank you. Now we're going to open the regular meeting of the Board of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please stand with me while we pledge allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
I am here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Je suis là.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Very pleased to have a proclamation tonight, and I wonder if Norma Jane would come up. And anyone else who's with her, please. Come to the podium. I'd like to read a proclamation about Fair Housing Month. This was submitted at the request of the Tompkins County Board of Realtors. Whereas April 11, 2017 marked the 49th anniversary of the passage of the U.S. Fair Housing Law, Title 8 of the Civil Rights Act of 1968 as amended, which enunciates a national policy of fair housing without regard to race, color, religion, sex, handicap, familial status and national origin. The state of New York adds creed, disability, marital status, age, blindness, hearing impairment, use of a hearing service or guide dog, sexual orientation, military status, and domestic violence victim. And whereas the Tompkins County Legislature, as well as the Ithaca Board of Realtors, are committed to highlight the Fair Housing Law, Title 8, of the Civil Rights Act of 1968 by continuing to address discrimination in our community, to support programs that will educate the public about the right to equal housing opportunities and to plan partnership efforts with other organizations to help assure every American of their right to fair housing. Now, therefore, I, Michael E. Lane, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim April 2017 as Fair Housing Month as the Ithaca Board of Realtors begins a year-long commemoration of the U.S. Fair Housing Law in Tompkins County, and urges all citizens to wholeheartedly recognize the celebration throughout the year. And we sign that today.
Hello, my name is Dan DeSanto. I am the president of the Ithaca Board of Realtors, and I am just here to acknowledge the importance of the fair housing laws when it was adopted in 1968, and that fair housing is not only an issue just in the month of April, but all year long, and that we practice it as realtors every day. I want to say thank you to the planning department, to the legislature, and particularly Martha Robertson for her leadership in the housing summit that recently took place here. And also the Ithaca Board of Realtors looks forward to continued partnership with solving housing issues in Tompkins County and the surrounding areas. I'd also like to let everybody know that Ithaca Board of Realtors has also just celebrated its brand new location up on Mitchell Street. And we thank everybody that attended our grand opening last week. And we are celebrating 90 years as a member of the National Association of Realtors. Thank you very much.
We actually had a presentation come to us as the legislature in Tompkins County at the Cornell Town Gown event that was held a week or so ago. And we were presented by Cornell University with a beautiful plaque with a nice sentiment I'd like to read. It reads, "In honor of Tompkins County, 1817 to 2017, as it marks its 200 years of progressive leadership and community service. Included in the important daily work of staff and elected representatives have been innumerable town gown partnerships and projects that have benefited the common good. For these and many other initiatives, the Cornell community is forever grateful. Congratulations to Tompkins County as it celebrates its bicentennial and continued success going forward. Presented with admiration and respect from Cornell University on April 7th, 2017, which, of course, was the actual 200th birthday of Tompkins County. So we'll proudly display this plaque, but I wanted to read it to everybody. I'm not aware of a need for an executive session tonight, Joe or Jonathan?
No.
Okay. We're going to proceed then to privilege of the floor for the public. We have a number of blue cards. Remind everybody. Yes, Marco.
I wonder if we can decide one way or another whether we're going to vote on the T21 tonight. In case we're not, maybe some folks would be happy to go home.
All right. When I see Anna return, we'll pause. Oh, there she is, crouching. Okay. Anna, are we going to vote on this tonight?
Well, that's not an easy question. I had some comments that I wanted to preface that with, but what I have seen today is there's a lot of concern, and there's also been some comments that I have appreciated requesting further information, further discussion. I think there's discussion that some of the legislators would like to have. So I think that it would probably be appropriate to cogitate over some of the discussion that we've heard, and we vote on it at the next legislative meeting. So I'd prefer to pull it for tonight.
We frequently do that. We don't vote the same night as the public hearing for just that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something you would like to withdraw from the agenda tonight?
Correct.
All right. Well, that will be withdrawn. So, folks, I know if you're looking for us to act tonight on the tobacco law, we're not going to act. We're going to take it back. Anna's committee is going to be talking about it some more, and it's likely to come back in 2 weeks. Now let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is your opportunity to speak to us on any topic for up to 3 minutes. If you want to speak, we need to have you sign one of these blue cards that are in the back. It's not too late if you want to speak. By signing the blue card and asking to speak, you are agreeing to our rules, which are a three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice, agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. There is a screen to my left. You may have already heard it during the public public hearing on the tobacco law, but it runs 3 minutes, and there's an audible sound at the end. If you're still speaking, we ask that you please conclude. The first one I have tonight is Mike Kaplinka-Lair. Please come to the microphone and state your name and your municipality.
Michael Kaplinka-Lair from town of Lansing, 118 Ross Road.
Former county legislator.
I'm here to speak to the Resolution O, which is the Community Celebrations Grant. Tompkins County is a welcoming county. I'm very proud of that. Town of Lansing is a very welcoming town. I'm very proud of that. The first mosque in the county will be built on Graham Road in the town of Lansing. I've served on the Strategic Tourism Planning Board. I've reviewed community celebration grant applications like you're considering passing tonight in the past. It's not an easy job. Thankfully, staff have helped organizations through the process when they are new to it. I want to give an analogy about a particular grant. Community Iftar, I-F-T-A-R, is very similar, actually, to Mardi Gras. It celebrates the end of a time of fasting. Fat Tuesday, or Mardi Gras, is a celebration before Ash Wednesday, a time of fasting for some. Would a community celebration grant be given for a Mardi Gras event open to the community to, quote, share food, ideas, common respect and understanding? If it met the criteria which are in your packet? Absolutely. This is like the Greek Orthodox Festival, which has been funded in the past. I hope you can support the funds, $1,700, to show that we are a welcoming community. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Lily Gershon and then L. Richard Stumbar.
Hi, I'm Lily Gershon, and I'm from Freeville. And I've just come to make a comment about the jail expansion study that recently we've been hearing a lot of things about, saying that what people want is a having services within the jail, mental health and detox services. And I just wanted to say that that many people, including myself, disagree with that idea, that if we put mental health and detox services inside the jail, we'll be criminalizing those things. We'll be criminalizing mental health and criminalizing addiction. If you've ever had someone in your family or friend who has suffered from addiction or has mental health issues, the last thing you want for that person that you're concerned about is to be put into a jail and treated like a criminal. That's not going to help them recover. And I think that if we listen to people who are most affected and we listen to our community, we can see that, yes, we want clinical services, we want detox, we want mental health clinics, but we do not want them inside an expanded jail. We want them in the community where they'll be accessible to everybody who needs them and accessible in a way that does not make that person feel like a criminal, because they're not a criminal. And a lot of these things have been addressed in the Tompkins County Municipal Court Task Force document. Well, I'm not sure if those specific things have been addressed in it, but ways to have less people in the jail so that we don't need to expand the jail have been addressed in this document. And I'm wondering, has that document been considered? It doesn't seem like it's been considered. And just about the jail study in general and whether the voices of people who are most affected by the jail and by potential expansion have been heard, and how, you know, how can there be language about having detox and mental health services inside a jail if those voices have been heard? Because it doesn't seem like they have been. So I'm concerned that the language is changing and that we're saying, oh, we're going to have all these great services in a jail, but it's not where they belong. So I urge you to think about that and think about if you know people who have mental health issues or addiction issues, whether you want them to get those services inside a jail. Just that's what I'm concerned about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Richard Stumbar.
Thank you. I live in the town of Ithaca, 6 Lowell Place in Cayuga Heights. I'm a lawyer here in Ithaca and have been a lawyer for, I don't know, more than 30 years. My purpose here is to call the attention to the legislature, the study that was done pursuant to a resolution back in 2015 by the Tompkins County Council of Governments. My concern and why I bring up the study at this point is because it seems to be a document that's been, for some reason, lost, at least lost to the public, lost to the legislature, and certainly lost to CGR. I've been on the website of CGR several times. They reference two reports that were done prior to the report I'm referring to. They're helpful, but of minimal value compared to the study I'm referencing. That study is called a report by the Tompkins County Municipal Courts Task Force. It was done in July 2016, and it was the subject of considerable research and effort by many long-time Ithacans with a great range of abilities and interests. There were judges like Len Galbraith and Scott Miller. The DA, Gwen Wilkinson, was on it. Jason Leifer, town supervisors, Betty Poole, the chairperson of the Tompkins County Magistrates, Mark Solomon, and several others. The report was filed in July of 2016. As I said, it doesn't appear on the website of CGR. I have emailed them and asked them why it's not there. It should be there. Although the report is titled the Tompkins County Municipal Courts Task Force, and that, in fact, it addresses to a considerable degree, a consolidation of courts and the efficiency of the courts. It also makes many recommendations with respect to the criminal justice system here overall. Those recommendations are significant. They refer to things like the LEADS program, an ROR situation for all misdemeanors, which the DA, the former DA, and the current DA have come out in favor. It's basically a document of reference to restorative justice, something I think that is a value to our community and consistent with our community values. I'm not so sure CGR is going to promote those values. I think that it is important that we do, and I ask you again to read the document. There is a lot in it. The study was very extensive, very considerable, very thoughtful, and it's ongoing. My law partner, who is a member, Ray Schlather, just recently met with the judge. It seems like we're going to get a third judge in Tompkins County, which was very important to consolidate the DWI cases, of which there are almost 400. Thank you.
Thank you. Breeden McQuaid, then Sherry Corthus.
Hello, my name is Brendan McQuaid. I recently moved to the county to start teaching sociology and criminology at SUNY Cortland. I'm here today because I'm concerned about the unsentenced population at the Tompkins County Jail. According to the most recent data available from the Division of Criminal Justice Services, 74% of those detained at the Tompkins County Jail are unsentenced, meaning they are awaiting trial. The vast majority of these individuals are low-risk defendants who are detained because they are too poor to make bail. Currently, as you know, the county is considering whether to add 45 beds to the jail. We could avoid this multi-million dollar investment in the jail by limiting the use of bail. This is a viable proposal. Recently, New Jersey instituted a comprehensive bail reform. As a result, the state has reduced the use of pre-trial detention by 85%. Closer to home, both our current and former DAs, as well as the July 2016 report just mentioned by Mr. Stumbar, all have recommended that judges release defendants on their own recognizance rather than set bail. In short, addressing unsentenced populations in the Tompkins County Jail is a viable way to address overcrowding without committing to a costly jail expansion. I hope the legislature will keep this in mind as they consider what to do with overcrowding at the jail. Thank you.
Thank you. Sherry Corthus, please. Then Phoebe Brown.
Hello. Oh, hi. I'm Sherry Corthus. I'm from Ithaca. In July of 2016, the State Commission of Corrections notified the county that on September 1st, our 18-bed variance would not be renewed. And the SCOC wants us to see a feasibility plan of adding a 45-bed pod and want a study to address these costs. So I know that you guys don't like us to say jail expansion because I was admonished for calling it a jail expansion committee. I know it's a jail study. So I just want to let you know, though, that it is looking at expanding the jail so we can, you know, putting the services within it, because once you read the corrections officer's letter, that's what they would like to see. But I have an issue with the fact that we're doing this study that's 60,000, and then we have the police consolidation study that we're doing. CGR, the same firm, is conducting the police and has also now hired Highland Group. And these are what I've I know we got the grant from the state for $50,000 on the consolidation. So now we're at $80,000 looking at a jail study and a police consolidation out of taxpayer dollars. But at the same time, I came to a meeting last week where we just gave $7.3 million tax abatement to the Newman Group out of Vestal, New York, with a $1.65 million sales tax abatement when our sales tax revenue is declining, and $112,500 for mortgage reporting fee, which at the same meeting, instead of borrowing $45 million, now the company needs to borrow $50 million. So this is my... And there's no affordable housing. It's going to be below market rate and, quote, for young professionals, faculty and staff, and empty nesters. It's in there. And, I mean, we have affordable housing issue with and people in jail because they can't afford to eat. They can't afford to, we just have a huge social problem. I'm starting to get off task here. But this new building is going to employ one manager and two maintenance people. And they're going to get this huge tax break. And here we are trying to figure out ways to save money because board-out costs are too high, which board-out costs have never been what was reported in the beginning when the CGR study started. But I just – and CGR has not been transparent. If you go to their website that started operating January 19th, we've had to, like, repeatedly stay on them to get things posted. I think we need to have more information. I would like to see the reentry interviews they've done and what kind of numbers you guys are seeing. I think we as taxpayers, since it's being funded through our money, should be able to see it too. So I'd appreciate it if there would be more transparency. Again, I didn't even know about this, that municipal task force report, and that seemed, I read it, and it, well, half of it, but it seems pretty good. But anyways, thank you, and have a good one.
Phoebe Brown, then Rebecca Regenspan. Regenspan.
Hello, everybody.
That's Barbara Regenspan.
Good evening. I come again tonight, and I'm very sad. My heart is really breaking. If you look around this room, you see who's here, right? And then we continue to ask, why aren't other communities here? Because we're not listened to. In that report, not once was it mentioned by the people who are most affected by incarceration. Not once did they give a report of what we sat with these people for an hour and talked about what we needed. So it hurts so much to read a report that do not even mention what we think would be adequate to keep us home with our families. I'm a recovering addict, and I'm also a returning person to this community. I would not have gotten what I got if they didn't have a detox center at Cayuga Medical Center. I know recovery and all those other ills work different for everybody, but if y'all are not even listening to our voices, and y'all already know how hopeless we are, how invisible we feel. It hurts to know that we pulled in as many people that we can pull in to come and talk with CGR, and they never even mentioned our request. That really hurts. That really hurts. And then y'all are not at the meetings, and y'all are not at this, and you're not at this. But why? Why do we come? We say we need affordable housing, and do you hear the report? It hurts. It hurts. If you don't know how it hurts, let me tell you. When I was in active addiction, the last thing I needed was an officer to come to me and tell me I needed detox. I needed a loving, caring person that I knew had my best interests at heart. When I came back out of jail after being shipped to, I forgot the county, it's been a long time, y'all. And it was because people in this community loved me, right? It wasn't because they had a place inside of the jail. I'm not saying our jail don't need fix up. Yeah. But what I am saying is our services need to be in a community that we can have access to it, not only when we are being locked up. I need a detox center when I'm ready to go in and get clean, right? And that might be not one of the nights I'm on my run, but I ask y'all to continue. Please stop making us invisible. We are here, we got a voice, and we are ready to share it. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Regenspan.
Mike, may I ask one question, please? Phoebe?
We generally don't, but...
No, I understand that. Phoebe, you referenced a report. What report are you talking
about? Whatever was on the web that
CGR... I'll follow up on that. I'd love to follow up on Phoebe's point addressing the website. At the hearing, at the public hearing in mid-January, the promise of CGR was that they were going to lead a community educational process through that website. Not one new document was posted until April 6th. And on April 6th, the one document posted was the letter from the Correction Officers Union. Now, the last thing I want to do is bash unions, but I want to point out that the correction officers are part of the prison industrial complex, which we need desperately to defund by transferring the funding to what's needed: detox, mental health services, jobs, and housing, affordable housing. We all know this, and the irony is that while the CGR study did zero to educate the community was educating itself by reading the Michelle Alexander text and chapter by chapter having community forums attended by as many as 300 people, learning that the mass incarceration system is basically a system of punishing brown people and poor people. Now, all five of the people who spoke before me said the same thing, and Phoebe put it, summarized it beautifully in terms of the pain of the community. So let me just say, the pain is that in a sophisticated community like this, such a miserably handled study, the basic promise being an interactive website that would educate the community, that was never done, okay? So CGR did not fulfill the basic tenet of their contract, okay? So to me, that nullifies the process, and I believe the legislature should now call a moratorium on the process until what was promised is delivered. Minutes from all the interviews, beginning with interviews with formerly incarcerated people who can say what worked for them, as Phoebe Brown so eloquently states, when people are willing to listen to her, as Edwin Santiago so beautifully states. But these are not the people who are listened to. And I want to say who I know is being listened to, okay? Because I heard him speak publicly 2 weeks ago at the when the League of Women Voters housed sponsored a well-attended panel called something like Alternatives to Incarceration, where the head of CARS locally called addicts animals three times in his talk. So this is the kind of backward sort of, you know, discourse that the community listens to. But formerly incarcerated people are the people who need to be the key spokespeople and need to be listened to. Not one word from them appears on that website. Not one word. Also nothing except that one letter. Oh, here's another embarrassing detail about that letter. Rich Johns, the head of the jail study committee, demanded at the mid-February meeting of the jail study committee that that letter be posted because it had come in the week before.
This is in mid-February, okay? That letter did not appear until April 6th, which is really interesting to me because the day before that, at Decarcerate Tompkins, our subject was...
We're going to ask you to conclude, please.
Okay, how we'll deal with the fact that the study was not done, the promised study was not done. In other words, that the main point of it was this interactive process with the community, which never happened. Thank you.
Thank you. Ellen Walsh and then Walla Haran.
Sorry, you have to listen to me stumble through stuff again, guys. But so I came here tonight to speak both about the jail expansion and about Resolution O. First, I'll say what I have to say about the jail expansion. After doing some research and talking to some people about it, I realize that what the jail expansion means is not the same thing as a private prison. But I would encourage you to think about the fact that it starts somewhere, okay? When we expand our capacity to hold people before they've had a bail hearing, then we are still taking part in the prison industrial complex. Now, I understand that there are difficulties involving housing people. I get that people have to be separated, sometimes by age, all the time by gender. And I can appreciate the difficult circumstances that come along with that, but I would really encourage you to listen to the people in the community. A lot of the people that we see in jails are people who need mental health services. They're people who need treatment. They aren't criminals. They're not rapists. They're not murderers. They're not even thieves necessarily. Like, and to treat them that way, it doesn't aid their recovery. It makes it harder. You put another obstacle in their way. So I would really ask you to think about that before you decide that expanding a jail is a way to address this issue. The other thing that I would like to speak in support of is Resolution O, which is funding for the community iftar dinner. I think that now is a moment in our country and in our community that we need to be showing unity. We have, as a county, sponsored other religiously related events in the past, and as an atheist who has no religious affiliation, I'm here in support of this event because it's a community building event. It's an opportunity to be intersectional and to welcome people and to form connections with people and to learn about people who aren't like us and who think differently than we do and to grow from that and make friends. It's pretty simple. It's a meal that everyone can get together and share, and we can talk and we can make ourselves stronger as a community. And I think that that is probably about the least controversial thing that has been discussed here this evening at this point. So I speak very strongly in favor of this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Walla Haran, then Ann Corman.
Good evening. I'm Walla Horan from Lansing, and I'm here to speak regarding the jail expansion as well as Resolution O. With regards to the jail expansion, I've had the opportunity to work with people that have been dealing with mental health issues and drug addiction over the last 2 years in particular, especially a subsect with our veterans. And one of the things that I learned is there is not a lot of support given to veterans that do come back and have to deal with all these issues. I've been working with and speaking with Jim Murphy, who has a tremendous amount of knowledge and is hugely connected with the veterans of our area. And it almost is heartbreaking to see him shoulder this burden almost solely. And these veterans that do fight for our country do suffer for our country, and they come back here dealing with all these issues. And what we do instead of supporting them is we put them in jail. So finding a better way to help support
our community members that are suffering with addiction, are suffering with post-traumatic stress, are suffering with depression. Instead of just putting them in jail, I think it becomes, again, similar to the tobacco issue, is the education and the support before the issue becomes a bigger problem. So I do encourage, again, and what Ms. Phoebe said about listening to the people that have gone through the experiences and learning from their experiences. It's really easy to say what could work from the outside in, but somebody who's gone through the process may have a lot more insight than we could ever say. So that's just my two cents on that. But in terms also in Resolution O, I read through everything, and what I would like to say is that I would like to see all of the funding passed unanimously. I think the projects that have been applied for and have been approved are great. But for me personally, the IQOS dinner, iftar, is literally an Arabic word for breaking fast. That's it. I'm with the group that's helping plan this, and it's just an opportunity for us to reach out to our community. With our mosque being built soon, it's an opportunity to just kind of let our community know that we're here and what we're doing. But it's not an educational event. It's not information about the religion or anything. Is just really a chance for us to participate and become part of our community and for people to feel free to do the same thing with us. And I think it would show a tremendous support of unity if it passes unanimously, that all these events are supported by the body that represents our county. So I think that would show, that would go a long way to show, especially if the representative from Lansing, where the mosque is going to be built, supports an event that's going to be hosted by the community. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. I have Ann Corman. I want to say I've got two blue cards left. Some folks came in. If anyone wants to speak on privilege of the floor, your last chance to fill out a blue card and pass it forward is right now. Go ahead.
Thank you. Ann Corman from the town of Ulysses. I actually wanted to just catch people up on a couple other topics. So you might have already heard the climate march in Ithaca is happening. There's a rally in March on the 29th, April 29th. It starts on the Commons at 11:30, and you can also look that up online. I have some little cards here I'll pass out for you guys. And some folks have asked why we're having it on the 29th, because this week, or the 22nd, this weekend coming up is Earth Day. We're having it to coincide with the National March in D.C. And the other thing I wanted to let you know, some folks have formed a new group that I'm part of. It's called the Finger Lakes Pulse. It's a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender group where we're going to do advocacy and service for that population. And we decided to start with something fun just to get things going in the community. So we think it's going to be June 24th. We're still working out the date. We're going to have a celebration dance, and it might be at the Green Star Space. So we'll keep you updated with that. So thank you.
Thank you. Doa Abdel Ghani.
Good evening. I'm a walking germ right now, so if I start coughing, I will walk out. So I am here as one of the three organizers for the proposed community iftar, which has, I guess, changed its name twice at this point. I think the latest name is, I just got a message actually about it like 2 minutes ago, Share Our Table. So I think that's the official name now, so we can all relax. But I really, you know, I've been so excited about everything that's been taking place in our community. I've lived in Ithaca since I was 3 years old, and the energy in Ithaca over the past year and a half has been invigorating. We saw a group, the Ithaca Welcomes Refugees, come out of a group of people who just cared, right? We saw the Ithaca community come together to not only fundraise, but to bag food for Feed My Starving Children. We saw the Women's March. We have seen our community come out of our enclosed spaces and start to mingle with other groups. And this dinner will back up our idea of we are all working together. This dinner will cost no one who comes to it any money. It is completely free. It does not require you to be a Muslim, a Christian, a Jew. Everyone is welcome to the table. And since we are saying we will all stand together, that I will be, have your back regardless of your faith, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, your race, this is the time to do it. I would highly recommend that when this event is held, that all the people who represent us attend. This is your chance to sit at the table with your constituents and hear what they have to say. Understand where they are coming from. This is my chance to listen to someone else's needs and have that relationship. It's time. Let's not let this slip away from us. It's our opportunity to all be on the same page. I sit here when the resolution passed for us to protect undocumented immigrants in our county. And I was so proud. But we don't know what they go through. We don't. And this is our chance. So let's do this. And maybe this will become a yearly thing where Tompkins County shares a table, where we all sit down and share a meal. And we laugh, and we share stories, and we create memories, and we break down borders. Thank you.
Thank you. The last card I have is Deborah Dawson.
Briefly, I too would like to speak in favor of Resolution O and the funding of the Share Our Table event. And also, as a member of the Village of Lansing Planning Board that had to sit through all the grumbling NIMBYs when the group came before us about building their mosque, I would just like to emphasize that it's not just in the town of Lansing, it's in the Village of Lansing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That completes all the cards I have. So we will move on next to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I know there's a couple out there. Yes, Rich.
Mike, just before the people leave who have spoken on the jail study committee, could I have a moment just to indicate that we will be going to CGR and putting as much information on the website as we can. That's a valid criticism, and we'll work on addressing that.
Thank you. Who would like to go? I see Deborah Cipolla-Dennis from the town of Dryden, town board.
Hi, everyone. Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, town board of Dryden. I mostly just wanted to bring your attention to some events that will be going on. April 26th in Dryden, we will be having a special town board meeting where the town board will be considering two solar farms, fairly large solar farms that are proposed in the town of Dryden. One is close to the Willow Glen Cemetery. The other one is in Ellis Hollow, just off of Turkey Hill, around the Dodge Road area. We'll be considering those. If you're interested in looking at those plans, everything, all the documents are up on the website now, so you can take a look at those. And then on May 1st, there will be an informational meeting at the Varna Community Center regarding the Dominion Borger Station. This is the natural gas station in Dryden off of Ellis Hollow Creek Road. They are doing some upgrades and some expansion there, and this will be about that project. Then on May 16th at the Aetna Fire Hall, there will be a public meeting on smart meters. That's at 6:30. And that is an informational meeting on learning about the smart meters that are coming to Tompkins County. And there's more information on our website about that meeting as well. Those were the big things. The big thing that Dryden is looking at right now is solar farms. And if you remember, we recently passed a law that now allows solar farms. And so now they have come to town. We're talking to them. So, any questions?
Anna.
Just the location of the meeting on the 26th and the one on May 1st?
Yes. The location of the meeting on the 26th is at our town hall. It's our regular location. And then which one? The May 1st meeting is at the Varna Community Center in Varna off of Route 366. I'm sorry?
What time, Deborah?
7 o'clock. 7 o'clock for the May 1st at the Varna Community Center. 7 o'clock for the April 26th meeting, and 6:30 for the Aetna Fire Hall meeting on smart meters on May 16th.
Anyone else?
Yes.
Deborah, thank you for coming and talking to us.
Thank you.
After the people spoke about the jail study, Rich Jones was allowed to speak to say that the documents would be posted on the website.
All right.
And I just wanted to.
I'm sorry. This is a meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature, and we will defer to our legislators. But you've had your opportunity to speak on privilege of floor. If you'd like to speak to Rich John or listen to his report when he comes on later in the meeting, we're glad to have you stay for that.
Okay.
We don't get into a give and take across the.
Yes.
Okay.
Like
well, we usually don't do that, but he was trying to make a clarifying comment. All right. Let's go to, I see Duxon Nguyen from the City Council, City of Ithaca. Welcome.
I too, have a bunch of public comment opportunities. So the waterfront plan is out. That's why we had the TMPUD to kind of exert control over the waterfront, but it's out now. It's in the planning committee. It's in the planning committee agenda on the city's website, cityofithaca.org. The city is also taking public comment on redesigning Martin Luther King Jr. Street and University Avenue. Those plans are also on the front page on the website. Comments are being taken until April 30th. And right now we're going through this big committee restructuring. These are the committees that the volunteer boards and committees where people give input to council. And so that's going to be a big change, a big reorganization, so we're taking public comment on that. And if you'll forgive me taking on a different hat real quick, Dan and Peter and I serve on the TCAD board, and we're in dire need of drivers and mechanics and supervisors, and there are a lot of jobs on the TCAD website right now, so if anyone in the public knows of someone who's suitable or looking for work, you don't need a CDL. TCAT will train you. It's decent pay, $19 an hour. So we have a great need there, and I'd appreciate anyone getting out the word on that.
Duxon, I have a question. You said they're talking about doing some redesign work on Martin Luther King Street. Does that include the section east of the Commons where the accident took place at Simeon's, or is this another part of the street?
This is the west part by the inlet.
Down that way. Okay.
Yeah. In a nutshell, that's going to road diet, they call it. So they're going to kind of make the lanes shorter or less wide and add bike lanes and pedestrian accommodations.
Other questions? Thank you for coming and talking to us. Oh, I'm sorry. Peter Stein has a question.
Yeah, just a comment. I'm delighted to hear about University Avenue. I drive that a lot, okay? And I'm telling you, at nighttime, going up that street when there are two rows of cars and then the whole thing is blocked by people parking there, I'm amazed that I haven't run into a car sometime. It's really not a safe street the way it is.
The rest of the city is amazed, too. Yeah.
I drive the rest of the city also. That's the worst example.
Hey. Trying to get your digs in.
Thank you very much. Any other public official I missed? I keep looking at her, but you're not the public official anymore, are you?
Emeritus.
All right, let's move to the privilege of the floor for legislators. Who'd like to speak? Dan Klein.
I have two things. One is it doesn't really fit in anywhere else, so I'm going to mention it here, mostly for legislators, that we have been meeting with the City of Ithaca and the Town of Ithaca about ideas about alternate forms of governance for the parks in Ithaca. And so there's a meeting coming up where we're going to spend 3 hours digging into the topic of what a parks conservancy might look like. It's just a working meeting to generate ideas and see what it might look like. If there are any legislators that are interested, I've already heard from a few. If there are any more that are interested in coming to that, let me know. We are, got a little logistics issue in terms of the room and food, but also the person on the city coordinating it just went on maternity leave, so we will get the information to you soon. Let me know if you're interested, and I will make sure you know. The other thing is for the community. I mentioned this before, Solar Tompkins, Heat Smart, which is an organization that's trying to get homeowners to use heat pumps and to do ceiling work in their houses to make them tighter and more weather resistant. That public process is coming to an end soon. There's going to be a meeting this Saturday, April 22nd in Danby for the public, Saturday 10 to 12 at the Danby Fire Hall. It's one of the last opportunities to find out information about that program. Thank you.
I have Anna Kellis next.
So I wanted to speak just in response to the public comment. The procedure for a response from the legislature is often that we can respond during privilege of the legislature to privilege of the floor. So it's just a procedural thing that we typically wait for that period. Unfortunately, the public doesn't often know that, so they leave before our comments, and we hope that they watch it on video. So just trying to follow that procedure, there's a couple comments that I wanted to make. One about IFTAR event. In studying it and speaking to people, I personally believe very strongly in the separation of church and state. And so, you know, I stand strongly in that. But what in my exploration of this, this is a cultural event, not a religious event. And that is a profound distinction to me personally. And it is a sharing of cultures, which is not in any way religious. The word happens to not be in English. And I think that that was therefore confused for representing a religious celebration. So I wanted to just say, for me personally, I recognize there was a profound distinction in that, and I appreciate it. And I look forward to attending. As far as the jail, the comments about the jail, for those that are still here, I just wanted to thank you all for coming, because a lot of the comments that you raised are very similar to the comments that the committee members have raised during the committee meeting. So it sounds like, in many regards, we're very much on the same page on the things that we're interested in, and that's very exciting to me. So what I would ask of everyone who's still in this room, and this is a plea, please come to the committee meetings. They are 5 p.m. the third Thursday of every month, and they have been happening since last July. So next month, for example, we have this coming Thursday is the next one. Please come. We have speakers who've talked about detox. We've had speakers to come and talk about an ROR and removing bail. We've had speakers who have come and talked about a myriad of alternatives to incarceration that many of you touched on here. Next month, we're having someone come and speak about the use of harm reduction as a mechanism for addressing drug abuse issues, rather than the old school style of war on drugs that we know didn't work. In science, I can say for myself, the statistics show that it didn't work. So I am asking, given that we all seem to be on a very similar page about what we would like to see, come and experience it, because I have been inspired by the speakers. And I, too, recognize in a recent exploration of the website that stuff needs to be up there. The last thing that I would say about it is, though, I have spoken, I've gone to the jail, and I've spoken with two or three times with inmates at the jail.
So at least for some of us, and I've reported on that, that was an extensive report that was given at the last jail committee meeting, we're listening directly to the people in the jail right now as part of the information that we are gathering and using to evaluate this. And I personally don't like the conversation of either or. We can only have services in the community. We can't have any services in the jail because that would be counterproductive. And I'd say, why can't we have both? Because my experience of talking to people in the jail over and over and over again when I go and I hang out with them is we are sitting here knowing we have a drug problem and we're twiddling our thumbs with this entire opportunity where we could gain skills, life skills, management of stress. We could take yoga, all of these things that we could do that when we get out, we would be more likely to address them instead of not having that ability at all. So I respectfully disagree with that it's an either or. I think it's a both. It's called a continuum of care. And the last thing that I would say about T21, there have been a lot of people that have mixed alcohol consumption and talking about alcohol consumption patterns and using those to reflect what happens with smoking patterns. Those are two exceptionally different drugs. So as an epidemiologist, the trends, the demographics of who consumes them are all very different, and how the drug affects the body psychologically and physically are very different. So I'd like to just step back using that as an argument. And as far as the ages and people saying affecting the age group of 18 to 20 being ineffective because when people start to smoke is earlier, the reason that that age group is targeted on some for some of the reason is because the majority of cigarette consumption by those in the earlier ages from 13 to 17, what they're finding is they come from the 18 to 20-year-olds. So the impact on reducing the purchasing abilities of 18 to 20-year-olds actually does have an effect statistically on those younger ages. So that's what we're talking about to a big extent. This is our opportunity to respond. I know that's a lot, but we had an extensive public comment period on many issues. So thank you for your patience.
Arthur Robertson.
Thanks, Ann. I really appreciate a lot. I was going to say a lot of what you said, especially about the jail study committee. Barbara, I hope you will communicate to the many people who spoke and accused us of things and then left before we had a chance to respond. And I think Rich kind of stuck his hand up in there before municipal officials were going to change the subject so that at least there was a chance some people would learn that we have heard you about the website, and that's certainly something that we're going to be working on. I would like to make a couple of comments that I think were incorrectly mentioned. The study by CGR is absolutely not done. I don't know who thinks it's done. It's very much in process. I agree completely about the website, and I'm glad that you and Edwin mentioned this in the editorial. I would say that the report that Phoebe mentioned, the report is actually a set of comments sent by the director or one of the staff people of URO, Ultimate Reentry Opportunity, about a meeting that CGR had with some formerly incarcerated folks. It was not a CGR report. It was Autumn's notes. It happens to be Autumn's notes. I was glad that she sent them to us. There were 12 returning members from the community there, and she said of those 12, 5 had been in our jail. So the comments of all were important, but it was really especially important to know that 5 of them were talking about our jail. Whoever it was mentioned that people are in our jail without having bail hearings, that's incorrect. We have assigned counsel at every arraignment that happens, and bail is the first thing that happens. And people may be in jail because they can't afford whatever the bail is set at, but everybody has a hearing about bail before they go to the jail. And the district attorney has told us, told the committee a couple meetings ago that partly due to the task force report that several people mentioned, that and his conversations with other DA staff and with Gwen Wilkinson that he was recommending, and he was communicating to the justices that he would be, from that point on, asking for presumptive ROR, presumptive release on recognizance, so that he can and is taking that step already. I would say that when we've had over the years a little bit of a misinterpretation and a challenge about our jail data. According to New York State requires us to keep stats on our inmates. There are two categories. They are either sentenced or unsentenced. So years ago, I started fighting, well, unsentenced doesn't mean convicted. It means they either could not have had their trial yet, or they could have had their trial, and now they're waiting for sentencing. Yeah, well, we can't do that, New York State, blah, blah, blah. If we were to go through and try to separate the unsentenced category, that would be we'd have to do it one at a time. So we understand those data aren't perfect, but people should understand that when it says unsentenced, it does not necessarily mean they haven't been convicted. Some have, or many have pled guilty. It's a variety of meanings of the word unsentenced. And if we're going to get a third court, that's great. I don't know. Was that Rich Stumbar? This is the first that, I've heard of it.
That hasn't been. It's only in the discussion stage at this point.
Okay. So there you go. I mean, there's a lot of misunderstanding that happens. A lot of, I'm sure X, Y, or Z is true. Please, people, ask the actual questions and try to find out, you know, the real information. As Anna said, come to the committee meetings if you can. If you can't, even though CGR doesn't have our minutes on the website, which they should, the county legislature has our agendas and minutes on our website. So information is there, and Joe or Captain Bunce or Sheriff Lansing, they're all very eager to answer questions, as is Rich. Thanks.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Two things. I'm sorry that Dryden town rep left. I wanted her to hear from me that the IDA has sent the two projects, the solar projects in Dryden, to public hearing as part of the IDA process. And that we have not scheduled it yet, but it will be coming very soon. And it will be set in the town of Dryden somewhere, probably. I'm not certain where, but I'm hoping they have a big room. At any rate, that part, the IDA's part of that is done, and the town now has to be there and deal with their portion of it. So I wanted to let her know, and I hope that she knows that we've done our part, the IDA has done their part, in putting moving these two projects forward.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I thank you, Mike. I wanted to talk about a few things. One is behind me there's a sign about Heat Smart, Tompkins. It is the deadline to sign up is the end of April. Any of you who have been drafty this winter, have felt cold and drafty, any of you who have had high heating bills or anticipate high cooling bills, or continue to, every few days we have cold and then we have hot and then we have cold. So we still, this far into April, are still using heat. This is a bulk purchasing program. We have a dedicated group of volunteers. The county acts as fiscal sponsor for this program. They're the same folks who brought you solar Tompkins and solarized Tompkins that enabled people to put solar panels on our roofs to address climate change issues and lower our own bills are now bringing us an incredible program. Even if your property is not suitable for sun, in which we can tighten up the envelopes of our homes, make them less drafty, waste less energy for all of us and for yourselves, put in heat pumps, air or ground source heat pumps for air cooling and heating, or water heating as well. Now is the time to sign up. There are three different sets of installers and companies you get to pick, but a lot of the research has been done for you, and it's a lot of help and guidance, and it's a cut rate. So I urge you to look at that if you haven't, and to do it quickly, because you'd have some decisions to make. Every meeting, rather than just use the dominant language of English, I pick another language and I say I am here in that language, and it is symbolic for me of the multicultural society we live in, the melting pot in which we welcome people from everywhere. I need some new languages. That was French today, but it's harder to find than you think. The words here, you can find how to ask for the bathroom in lots of languages on the internet, but it's harder to find. I am here. It got me thinking about, well, first of all, I do wonder if there are still people here who want to hear it, maybe we can move up the tourism program decisions in order to accommodate that. Not yet. This has all gotten me thinking about are we done? Do I still have the floor?
You still have the floor.
Still the floor.
Thank you. I wanted to say something about how dominant cultures take for granted the ways in which its customs become built into the very fabric of everyday lives. We talk about ourselves as a melting pot. We think of ourselves that way. But there's a way in which everybody's expected to melt into the culture that was here, wasn't here first, but that founded the country. What we define as secular stemmed originally from religion and still does. So the holidays become national holidays. Christmas is a national holiday. We don't meet them. Everything closes down. It's literally one of the listed national holidays. The God that we mention in the Pledge of Allegiance, we say at the beginning of the meeting. I was a Girl Scout. We have an award coming to us tonight that has to do with Girl Scouts. Well, the Girl Scout oath, I can still say it. I'll spare you, but mentions that God, that same God that I don't think is meant to be everybody's gods. I think there was a God in mind, a particular religious perspective in mind when that was written, and there still is. The day of the week that we don't meet. We never meet on a Sunday. We'll occasionally set things for Saturday, but we don't set things for Sunday. Well, that doesn't necessarily serve me and my religion, but it does serve the dominant culture. I've been thinking about that and the ways in which we take for granted and the ways in which our celebrations awards and our other tourism awards have been able to recognize all kinds of cultures and make sure that we all are exposed to each other's. Everything from Dragon Day. I was in Asia. Do you know the dragon eyes? The Dragon Day celebration comes from the ancient belief that was religious originally, more pagan religious than current day religious, but that you needed dragon eyes looking down into the water to scare away the bad fish. And I can go down a list of awards that we've given. So thank you. And I do hope we can move that up so that people who spoke to us about that can see us
vote.
Let's move to Rich John, then Leslin.
Thank you, Mike. I did want to just speak to the issue of the jail study. By speaking earlier, I didn't mean to make things worse. I thought I was helping, but you never know. And I wanted to thank Anna and Martha for really covering it. I only had one other comment, which is that the speaker is consistently, actually two comments. One is, thanks for coming. It's good to hear from you. But consistently, everybody was saying is a jail expansion committee. And I think, in fact, somebody said we were planning on building a 45-bed pod. This is news to me. And I would like to be clear about the process that we set up to follow, which is that we're doing this in two phases. And we've given very clear direction to the consultant on what they are supposed to be doing in this first phase, and it is not looking at building additional beds. The first phase is really examining our current alternatives to incarceration, and trying to determine, are there things we're not doing? And other things we are doing, can we be more efficient? They're also tasked with looking at the demographics of our county. Since the jail was built, we've had significant growth in county population. And we need to try to figure out where are we going population-wise, what do we think is going to happen to the jail population, and try to get answers to that. If it's determined that we cannot address issues of our jail overcrowding without doing some sort of further action, we then go to a second phase. We may not get there. If there are alternatives to incarceration that can allow us to address the problem, that would be far preferable. I don't think there's anybody on this legislature really anxious to spend a lot of money on construction at the jail. But that is second phase. So to say it's a jail expansion committee is not accurate. I can't tell you what might happen in the future, but that's not where we're at now. So you're certainly ahead of us if you're thinking that's what we're doing. And I also wanted to echo what Anna said, was that the people who are in the jail are people. And I don't understand this idea that we should do nothing for them. That doesn't make sense to me. So I want to be clear that when I hear people saying we should have no services for the people who are in the jail, I'm troubled. I think we have to think very carefully on that. Thank you.
Leslin McGee, Claremont.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to pick up where Rich left off. First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming out and speaking. It's always great when the public comes and shares their opinion, or when we go to where the public is and hear what they have to say. I am hoping no one is saying, or what I heard from folks, is not to have services in the jail for the people who are already there. What I think I heard is that we should not be putting people in jail because they have issues of addiction or mental health issues that might have caused them to commit a crime, that we should really be trying to figure out ways to deal with those issues within the community as opposed to incarcerating folks with those issues. I also just want to say in a general comment, because I know often we sit on this body and we know some of what goes behind the scenes in trying to juggle things and make decisions, and not everyone has that information. But people will come and speak to us or call or however they connect with us based on what the information they have and based on their perception. And somewhere in perception, there's reality. And so I don't want to knock anyone for what they are perceiving might be something that's going on. Instead, what we do, and thank you, Martha, for trying to correct some of that, is sharing what is actual fact, what is factual, what is happening in the moment. So appreciate everyone who spoke. There are a couple of other things I just want to point out real quickly that's going on. April 30th, you know, Light and Lively Things, is Streets Alive. We encourage people to get out of your cars, bicycle, foot, skate, rollerblades, roller skates, skateboards. Get out, meet, greet, get around, talk with neighbors, different things happening. It's on the north side this time of year. So Cayuga Street, all the way down towards Court Street, we host some events in front of GIAC. Generally, we host the Beats Alive portion of Streets Alive. So we infuse some amount of hip-hop culture into the Streets Alive event. So you're encouraged to please come out from 1 to 5 on that day. At the same time, there is also a celebration of Cinco de Mayo that happens every year. It's in connection with that. So all kinds of things happening. April 22nd, this coming Saturday, I want to bring to your attention an event that's happening called Honoring Our Waters. It is at noon at the large pavilion at Stewart Park, led by the Cayuga Nation and sponsored by Cayuga Lake Water Protectors. Following that, it's a sort of blessing of the waters by members of our Native American community. And following the ceremony is a potluck meal. Please bring a dish to share and bring your own utensils. Your own dinnerware, your own utensil, your glass. So the event begins at noon. So encouraging people to be there. The community read event, final chapter of the new Jim Crow. We've talked so much about this here. That was scheduled for yesterday. It was moved to May 1st. And I hope from 5:30 to 7:30, same place, Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. This is the time when we really sort of, we've been reading this, we've been talking about it, people have been reading in different circles. And we want to talk about beyond the moment. What do we do next? What's the call to action after we've dissected what is happening in our mass incarceration system? What do we do next? And it's interesting to hear the conversation around the jail study. So I encourage all of you to please attend. Even if you hadn't had a chance to attend before, this might be a place where you can have good input about what your role can be in trying to move the agenda forward in changing the face of mass incarceration in our country and in our even local community. So those are things I wanted to share. Thank you.
Julie Kiefer, then Peter Stein.
Sometimes I have time to watch television, so I watch Designated Survivor. Usually I tape it. And for those of you who haven't watched it yet, it's a story about how our total government at the federal level got blown up, and the only person who survived was the least important member of the government, the Secretary of Health, Housing and Urban Development. It was HUD then, yes. So the reason I'm mentioning it is not because, well, it is a little stranger than what's really happening in Washington. They're both quite surreal. But on that TV show, the surviving person, first wore a Cornell T-shirt when we saw him. And then later on, he was, he's had more than one occasion to mention Cornell. Most recently, he was trying to convince a fellow Cornellian, who was a Republican senator, to vote for a background check gun bill. And he did it by presenting what was described as a Pines burger. The man recognized it. Is this a Pines burger? You really got one for me? And there is the Glenwood Pines on West Hill. And the answer was no. The Secret Service wouldn't let me bring a Pines burger in here, but the chef downstairs figured out how to make one. So Ithaca gets all kinds of interesting publicity.
What TV show?
Designated Survivor.
I took my feed, man.
Well, you've made us hungry.
So, well, but that's... So I really wanted to mention that the State League of Women Voters has just taken a position on a constitutional convention. They support us having one. We'll all get to vote in November on whether we should have one or not. Every 20 years we get a chance to consider this possibility. And I thought it was newsworthy that the State League of Women Voters has come out in support of it. I felt like commenting on all of the speakers. I won't do that. I associate myself with a lot of your remarks. Lastly, I want to mention about Cargill, which had an open house 2 days this week. The idea being you could go in and there would be representatives from Cargill who would answer your questions. They asked you to RSVP. But word was sent around that, oh, no, you can just show up and you can go in and get educated on the subject. And that latter thing turned out to be absolutely untrue. If you were not, by your address, recognized to be a near neighbor of the Cargill salt mine, you were not allowed into that meeting. You were turned away. And I thought that was bad PR. It was unfortunate because people did show up and want to go learn more. But I thought you all should know that it's not quite the open process that we hoped it would be. Thank you, Mike.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, what? I've been sitting and listening for a long time, and I feel I have to say something now. My mouth is sort of dry.
You don't
have
to.
Well, I think I will. I must confess, this is the first time I've heard anything about putting a detox thing in the jail. And I've sat here listening, why in the world would anyone do that? I mean, if we're going to have one detox facility in the county, I bet you no one's suggesting that that be located in a jail. It makes no sense whatsoever. So I was thinking, why would anyone do that? And I think the only thing I can imagine, other than some desire to do some harm to someone, is that could it be possible that, you know, if you put a detox facility someplace other than the jail and someone in the jail needs detox, then it's a lot more complicated because a person who's in jail can't be treated like any other person. They have to have policemen take them with them till they go. So it's all a matter of money. I mean, would it be cheaper to put an extra detox place in the jail or spend the money to take a person who's in jail and needs detox and bring him to the one place that we're going to do? If there's any other argument for doing that, I'd be very surprised. But I myself see nothing wrong with doing it the way that I imagine it's being done. So that's all I have to say. I don't know anything about that, but that's what it occurred to me when I was listening.
Martha's asked to speak again. Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken, wants to speak? Martha?
Thanks very much. I just want to say it is really exciting to see so many people here, and I'm sure to speak to us. And it's one of those things where, you know, when we were over in that building and there was about this much space for the public, nobody came to talk. So we made a nice big room and we got y'all here. So it's great. I just wanted to mention the March for Science is this weekend. There's the Climate March on the 29th, this Saturday, the 22nd. I'll be going down to the Washington March for Science, and there is one in Ithaca as well at noon at the Bernie Milton Pavilion. The rally will feature science activities and presentations from local groups, students, and scientists, et cetera. So this Saturday, you don't have to go all the way to Washington, but noon at the Bernie Mountain Pavilion. Thank you.
We've had a request from a legislator to move up Resolution O. So I'm going to turn to Jim Dennis and ask if he would move Resolution O, and we'll do that before we take our break.
I can.
I want to move the award of the Spring 2017 Community Celebrations Grants. And the resolution that I'm looking at has a suggested change that that I worked with Kathy Covert to put in. And as someone else broke the news, it is now called the Community Iftar 2017 is now called Chair or Table Dinner 2017. I have an underlined document here. Kathy, Tom.
For a second.
Okay, and I will move that resolution.
Unanimous second?
Well, I'm not sure we have a unanimous second on this one. Let's just go ahead. We have it seconded. Go ahead, Jim.
And per that resolution, I have a letter from Tom Knipe to Kathy Covert, and there's an underlined thing that says, as discussed in recent email exchanges, the organizers are opening to changing the name of the celebration to clarify the intent as a non-religious celebration that is open to all. The name of the revised resolution should be Share a Table Dinner 2017. And I just wanted people
to... Leslin.
Mr. Chair, I want to acknowledge that on this resolution, the Greater Ithaca Activity Center is there receiving money. And although it's not going directly into my pocket, I am paid to run this organization. So I'm asking to able to abstain from the vote on this.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Carol, do you have a question on that?
So if I'm on the board of one of the organizations as liaison from this body,
You're not a paid person.
No, I'm not paid. No, they asked me for money.
I think that's the difference that Leslie's
pointing
out.
Thanks.
All right. I've got, Dooley next, I think.
I didn't say it under privilege of the floor. I was waiting till this resolution came up. I am very concerned about keeping a separation of church and state, and because the original celebration, whatever its intention was scheduled on a religious holiday for breaking fast, that bothered me. And I'm very grateful to the organization for being willing to remove that part of what concerned me, so I can vote for this. I do support this very much.
I think I've got Martha, then I'll take you, Mike, after that.
Well, I just wanted to check and see. It says, is June 3rd the actual date of the dinner? Does anybody know?
Yeah. Right now, yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Mike Sigler.
So, this was a long discussion, a good discussion, but a long one. I wish everyone would remember that I'm the only one responding to the other 14 people talking. I do want to thank the organizers for changing the name to Share Our Table. It actually does allow me to vote for it, so I'm happy about that. It also, though, I want to say makes me a little sad, and here's why. I am a big believer in religion. I believe that religion is actually the foundation of civilization. You know, some people say it's farming. I am not of that school of thought. So for me, religion is important. I mean, I have been to Morocco. I have gone and walked around the markets. I get it. I mean, I see the culture, and I see the connection to religion. And I wanted to say, you know, it makes me a little sad when people say, well, iftar is just this. No, iftar is important. It's the end of Ramadan. It's a big deal. You know, to me, I'm not even in the religion, and I think it's a big deal. One of the five pillars of Islam. So I don't like this idea that we just kind of minimize something like that either. I mean, I heard somebody say, during this discussion, somebody had mentioned, well, you know, I had dinner on Easter, and that didn't make it an Easter dinner. And I'm like, you know, I've read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and I don't remember brunch being in there. And it's not, that is not the point of Easter. And it bothers me that we kind of look at religion of other people that way. You know, somebody else mentioned Mardi Gras. Yeah, at one point, Mardi Gras was for Roman Catholics. And everybody would get up in the morning and they'd go get the ashes at a mass. Yeah, that's not the case anymore. You know, Budweiser puts it on their packaging.
Yeah, it's different. It is expanded outside of the Catholic religion, and I would suggest that probably 90% of the people that go to Mardi Gras probably don't get up in the morning and go and get ashes on their foreheads. So it makes me a little sad. I like sharing in other people's religion. Anna, she's got her hand up.
I'm sorry. I appreciate your comments.
Other people, you know, to me, I like sharing in those religions. I like going into churches of the world and checking things out. And I like going into a mosque, or I like going into, you know, I like the Seder for Passover. So for me, you know, it makes me a little sad that those kind of things are taken out. And I would like those to be shared. I just don't want public money to be spent on them. That's it. I mean, it was really that simple for me, that there is a clear line. This is the line. I would love to go to a dinner like that. I'm not against the dinner. I'm sure it will be great. I would like religion to be shared. It's just, there's the dividing line for me. It's simple, you know. And people keep saying, you know, this is open to the public, too. Pretty much every religious service I've ever been to is open to the public. I've never seen people kicked out. You know, you come to a church service, people sit you down, enjoy. You know, here's what we're about. Another, you know, a friend of mine, she's Greek, brought up the Greeks event that we have put into STP before. I Googled it. It looks like 2012 was when we did that. I was not on the legislature. I would have hoped that when I saw that, I would have brought up that issue too, because, I mean, even in their literature, it says, you know, we are very proud to share our Orthodox Christian faith and Hellenic culture with you. Well, fantastic. I'm glad they're proud to do that. I just don't know if the county should throw money at that. I don't know. So I just wanted us all to recognize that, you know, recognizing something is not the same as paying for something. And that is a policy, that this community is going to set. And so when somebody comes and says, listen, I want to do a Christmas tree, I could make the argument, yeah, you know, Christmas tree is not in the Bible. It's not a Christian thing, really. It's a Germanic thing. You could make that argument. So I'm not saying it's a correct argument, Will. I'm saying it's an argument. So anyway, that's all I pretty much have to say to this. I think this will probably be a great event. I think it will be you know, wonderful to share communion with people and to understand what's going on in their culture. And I plan to vote for this, and I thank them very much for being able to change the name on that. But again, I don't like this minimization of what it actually is. I mean, what it was when it first came forward. It is important. So, thank you.
Anna Kellis.
I usually come back, Mike, with a very strong opposition, and in this case, I'm not coming back in a strong opposition to the separation of church and state. I think having pride in people's religious faith and beliefs is beautiful, and we have this concept of separation of church and state for a reason. I do appreciate that. Iftar is not actually the end of Ramadan. If it was, then I would agree with you. From my understanding, it's actually separate. So I wasn't minimizing the respect for it, simply correcting and recognizing that it was a separation. It's the end of the day, and so my understanding is it's like the celebration after Ramadan is completed. So there is a separation in the community, but I'm not going to get into that, and I would let them speak for themselves. And that was the point that I was making. So,
take Will Burbank, and let's see if we can get to a vote.
Thank you, Mike. And Mike, thank you for raising this issue. You know, when you sent this out, my first reaction was, yeah, he's got a point. I am concerned about the presence of religious observances throughout government. It's not just paying for it. I, for example, do not think it is appropriate that when we stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, that we collectively say the words under God, which, as you probably know, were added in 1952 in large part, maybe 55, thank you, but it was in the context of defining this country as different from godless communism of the era. I think our founders were deeply cognizant of the danger of state-established religion. They knew how oppressive it could be. And one of the beauties of our country is this sense that our government is separate from that. So we are all free to practice whatever religion we choose, but it will not be supported. There are many subtleties to this, and Carol was talking about built into our culture. Interesting fact, back, my folks were in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. In that time, it was literally against custom, if not law, to celebrate Christmas. That was considered utterly wrong. And, the tradition of the celebratory is relatively late. It's like late 1800s in this country. I hope this conversation goes forward. I hope we do try to be respectful of everybody's religion. But I think this was a good discussion. Mike, I thank you for getting us started.
I would like to get to a vote. Jim Dennis?
I'm not going to join in the discussion about religion or what, but I just want to thank the organizer of this for being willing to talk with us, talk with our person, Tom Knipe, and come to this conclusion so that I'm guessing that everyone will vote in a positive way for this. And, I just want the celebration to go on and be the best one it possibly can.
On the award of Spring 2017 Community Celebration Grants, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have any abstentions? We have one abstention. That passes. Thank you. We'll take a 10-minute break now. Okay, folks, we're back in session. We're down to chair's report. Don't have too much report, except I think for our minutes we ought to recognize that just prior to this meeting we had a reading of a piece that was written by county historian Carol Kamen called Nine Towns in the City, which was a little skit about the first meeting of the Tompkins County Board of Supervisors back in 1817 and followed through the creation of the county when the various towns came in and left and the city was formed. And it was kind of fun, and it was televised, and so hopefully folks that watch the reruns of this will be able to see that. We're not experts, and the next time, if you want to see it live, is going to be Friday, May 5th, at Gallery Night at Tompkins County Public Library. I think Gallery Night runs from 5 to 8, and I think the group is going to do the reading at about 6 o'clock, and that the parts will change. People will be different people doing it, but it'll be fun. I have, are there any questions I can answer as chair? Jim?
Just a comment, Mike. I thought everyone did a great job. I hope in your next event that you mic everyone up, seriously, so that everyone can be heard, as well as the gentleman that was at the microphone at the front of the room. And it was really fun to think about 631 people in the county. There are more people than that come to these meetings, So that was pretty spectacular. And my final comment is we have a connection to Governor Daniel Tompkins. It's our own Kathy Covert. Mm-hmm. She is a relative. And if there is a float, she should be the queen on top of the float.
Kathy, you want to mention how you're connected?
Well, absolutely true.
I would also mention that I have a connection to Jacob Yapo, who was with Simeon Duet, one of the first three settlers here in Ithaca.
So Kathy, what is your connection?
On my father's side,
You're a descendant or you're related somehow?
Yes, yes, he is an ancestor.
Kathy was a Tompkins, right?
Yes, yes, my maiden name is Tompkins.
So was the town
now
of
it's Covert.
Covert. The town of Covert named after you?
Yes.
She's definitely not 200 years old. Martha?
Yeah, I was going to say she doesn't look that old, but I noticed, did you say one of the speakers said 139 buildings? Is that right?
Yeah.
So 600.
Not including outhouses.
Not including, okay. So 600. Some people 31. In 139 buildings, which would be buildings including commercial stores and whatever. So that was a denser population, I guess, than, you know.
Well, not there were big box stores.
What?
There were big box stores. Okay. You know, but.
I really enjoyed the reading. It was great.
It was fun. And then we'll have lots more things going on this year for the bicentennial. And
oh,
so
I
stay
it.
Tuned.
I love it.
I should mention that... I did attend the kickoff event for the town of Groton's bicentennial, which was held last Friday night. There were several members of our commission there. Our county administrator, our public information officer was there, Ray Wheaton from our commission, and I. We heard some speeches, and there were a lot of proclamations. I had a lot of people, had some birthday cake afterwards. So Groton's got the rest of the year-long celebration going on over there, too. Any comments on top of that?
No, that's great. Thanks, Michael.
Glenn spoke, too. He was there. I have two chair's appointments to the Workforce Development Board, Brian K. Forrest and Joe Sammons. Let's go to reports. County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. You know, I've always thought that Kathy got her job based on her skills, and now I know she got it through her connections, so it's interesting to hear that. I have a few things tonight, mostly in the way of updates, none of which are really connected, so I'll try to take a breath in between the bullets here, but just want to make sure certain things remain on your radar because they are upcoming or they're occurring as we speak. I'm sure Jim will say it too, but you do know that next Tuesday night is the budget retreat for the 2018 budget. Here we go. 5:30 at the usual place at TCAT. So that will kick off the budget process that will end shortly before Thanksgiving this year. A couple of meetings ago, I talked to you about the fact that we are working with the city to look at what's now called mass communication system, used to be called reverse 911. It's a sophisticated automated system that allows us to get information very quickly to if we need to, the entire community. And then if we choose to, by subscriptions and by people letting us know that they'd like to be informed, we can let specific individuals know about things that are relevant to them. Things like our employees, when we have a weather-related closure, we'd be able to quickly get information to them. The city has talked about alerting people to on-street parking changes, things like that, a host of uses. And we've been working with the city on that for some time. That's reaching conclusion soon. There are some demonstrations that are being offered. I think that'll come to closure very soon. I expect that we'll be bringing a resolution forward that will talk about a joint approach to acquiring that system and using that system, and I hope that happens in May. So expect that, and I'll be briefing Rich's committee this week on more of the details. Christina Dravis has been our point person on that and can speak to the details of what all that will entail. I'll take a breath because this is very different than the last one. It's official that Patricia Carey, as you know, has announced her intent to retire sometime in August of this year. You know that Patricia has been a real pillar of this government for a long time, and we'll have lots of time to talk about the good things that she's accomplished before she leaves in August. But I did want to let you know that the search process will begin quickly, that we are impaneling a search committee, be an advisory committee that I think will include a fairly broad spectrum of individuals. We always involve the legislature. A couple of legislators will be on it. Paula and I will both be on it. a couple of community representatives, the CSEA union president, and two department heads from the community services, or the human services departments will also be on it. The process will be managed by Michelle Rios Domingos, our newest employee in the Human Resources Office. She was the head of talent acquisition, is the head of talent acquisition. She did this routinely at IC, so she's got a lot of experience under her belt. So she will be managing that process for us. We think it'll last about 10 weeks. The goal is to get to the finish line with a little time left in Patricia's term so there can be a period of overlap and transition. So that's our goal. Take another breath because this is different too. Shared services. We've talked a lot about shared services, what the governor's proposed, where it landed with the legislature. One idea that is kind of percolating, and I've talked to Mike and Dan about it, and I'm beginning to see similar ideas arising throughout the state, is to recognize that there is value in what the governor's proposed with respect to process, bringing people together at a high level to talk about ways to share services. But the deadlines that have been set in that law are unreasonable, that you can't accomplish what the governor would like us to in the few days left between now and August 1st. It can't happen. We don't think that there are sanctions for not meeting the deadline. In fact, it looks like if you can't make the deadlines this year and can't move something forward, you just repeat the process next year. So increasingly, counties are talking about, why don't we set next August as a deadline and work toward that. And so that's kind of an approach that we're beginning to think about here, and I just wanted to make sure that we were continuing to update you on how that is shaping up and also to get a chance to get your feedback on whether that feels right to you as well. We've talked about the Tompkins Trust building for many months. It is still moving forward. We are continuing to go deep in the exploratory phase of it. I think all of that will come to closure within the next month to perhaps 6 weeks. So my expectation is we'll be able to tie up some loose ends and to bring something forward for your consideration in either May or June. I think it may be ready for you in May. So I wanted to make sure that that stayed on your radar. The police shared services study, there's some overlapping comments on that tonight, overlapping with the jail. Just so you know, that process remains in a period of heavy data collection and analysis. So in terms of things that are happening that can be reported to the community, it really is looking at a mountain of data that relates both to organizations and to activities. Crime activity, things like that, but also the structure of these organizations. And they're very focused on that. There was a community outreach meeting. Surveys are still out there. I sent you a note today encouraging you to encourage others to participate in the survey. I have a stack of hard copy surveys right here that I'll be sending in. And please, if you've circulated those surveys to places, if you can help get those back to me, I'll make sure they'll get to the consultants. So that is underway. Just a couple more points here. The active shooter training that we began last year will soon be concluding. Our building went through it today, at least parts of our building. The entire county will be through that process by mid-year. We will pick up immediately with a countywide de-escalation training for all of our employees. And so that will start sometime in June and will affect all county employees. Important training that many county employees have asked us to provide, and so it's the most efficient approach to do it on a countywide basis. And, again, that will begin as early as June. The last thing on my list relates to the TC3 budget. It will soon be time for TC3 to convene both counties to talk about your tolerance for increases. What do you think? They'll present their budget. Usually that process begins, and it did this year, with kind of an informal leadership meeting of the two counties with President Haynes. It's clear that Cortland is going to be as constrained in its approach for the next fiscal year as it was last year. I'd say that they're, based on what we talked about at that meeting, Cortland may have the tolerance for a small amount of growth, but not much, which led to a conversation about, are there things that are unconventional for the college, but rather conventional for us? Are there things like one-time items that might help them through, that don't commit us to a higher baseline, but might help the college as it deals with a very difficult situation right now? And I think you should expect the college to advance something. They're working on a concept that they're beginning to float, which would use one-time money from ideally both counties to acquire a software system that will allow them to streamline and automate a lot of administrative and service functions that are currently paper-based and labor-intensive. It reminds me a lot of what Cooperative Extension often asks for, which is support for capacity building that may involve a little money today, but save a meaningful amount of money over the long term. And so the college will very likely be presenting something like that that will help them get through this period. And again, ask for one-time money in addition to a small amount of baseline from us. So I just want to, again, get that into the vocabulary on your radar and give you a sense of what may be coming from TC3 as a part of its budget request. And I think that's the end of my report.
That joint budget meeting, Joe, I believe is Friday, May 12th, I think at 11:30.
Great.
I saw Dooley's hand, then Martha.
You answered one question I had. The other question I have is just whether you have any idea when we will know who the new president for TC3 will be.
Mike probably has a better handle on it.
They're having to meet with the SUNY board in Albany. I believe the local trustees have selected a candidate, but that also has to be approved, and they'll have a joint announcement. I think fairly soon. I don't have an exact date on that. Martha.
Thanks, Mike. A couple of things, Joe. The trust company project, what committee would that come through?
I think it will go through F&I and probably from there to budget and then to the full legislature. And I think it should make a courtesy stop at least in GO because the History Center, the program committee is GO. But because we're acquiring a building, if it happens, it should also formally go through F&I.
Okay. On the shared services initiative, I agree with you about the timetable. It seems that with TCOG, we are so far ahead of the game. But I also happened to be here that day that you had the meeting, a special meeting with supervisors. So it occurs to me that this a little bit of a more kind of elbow grease on getting this done might bring the municipality. There are a couple of municipalities that don't participate in TCOG. This would maybe give some more make more of an imperative of that, which I think would be a good thing. I hope maybe also we can. What I read was that the schools could participate, yeah, but don't have to.
Right.
Maybe especially if we're looking at, like, next August.
Yeah.
I think that would that's really long overdue. It would really be fruitful to try to bring how many school districts we have, into the conversation. I think there are a lot of opportunities we haven't even.
Yeah, we would agree. And I think BOCES is especially important. I think they do a lot of things, BOCES does, that might be a template for things that a county can do. I think Mildred Warner at Cornell has often talked about maybe counties could be kind of the municipal BOCES, and I think that may be an interesting model to look at.
So it would take a lot of conversation, but that's worth doing. And then just finally, and I guess because privilege of the floor was so full, I didn't mention the float building, but since that's in your department, would you want to talk about that?
Well, I can't because I was there for all of about 3 minutes, but there are two members of the legislature who spent most of Saturday in the highway barn.
Marsha.
Oh, I know. I'm going to get to Marsha. And Marcia, Steve Estes, Tammy Van Orman, Todd Van Orman, Sarah Cantatori. Was that it? And me for 3 minutes. Did a bang-up job. It was amazing the little time I was over there. So we do have a good platform that we got from our highway department. And there is a cake that has been built, not baked, that goes on top of it. And it looks to be, what, 9 feet tall, 8 feet tall?
A lot taller than that.
And it's actually round. It looks pretty good. And I think there's an upcoming one, and boy, Marcia might be able to help me with dates, but the painting, frosting, whatever.
Six,
the cake.
Cake decorating. It's being headed up by Heather. It's May 6th, Saturday, May 6th. Fortunately, I wouldn't be here to decorate, but we encourage all you. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and
like having some power tools.
Yeah, the highway bar and the wire mesh has to go around first before...
So we decorate.
Stuck, yeah.
So please, if you can join in decorating our birthday cake for our Ithaca Festival parade float, we'd really love it. It was quite a fun time on Saturday.
The time?
Building. We started on Saturday at 10.
Left after 5.
And go until we're done. Some of us had to leave early because we had to go to a princess party. But they'll go until they're done. So you can come at any time in there.
Here's the most important thing. So both of you hold up both hands and go like this. All 10 digits on both hands still there after all that.
Any fingernails left out.
Special thanks to Stephen Estes and Todd Van Orman, who really did all the planning and got the materials ahead of time and figured out what in the world to do and how to do it.
He was our project manager, definitely.
Okay, I'm going to go to Carol next, but I just want to say that it's 8:15. We need to pick up the pace. We haven't got to committee reports yet, so let's keep that in mind. Carol?
I had two things on two of your items. One was on that de-escalation training. Yeah. Can they get to us, one of the first?
I think so.
Before budget time, at least?
I'm sure you're on the list, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on,
before budget time.
Yeah, right. And... on the shared services, it's hard to believe that the governor wouldn't have something in mind that he's leading to for penalties, an ultimate stick. I'll just throw that out there. I'd just be interested to know either now or later if you've heard any rumors to that effect. And if he am I correct that he has not included... The state hasn't included the school districts. They haven't asked us to do shared services with the school districts yet. I think it's a great idea. Given our track record, we're likely to do it on our own, and then be told we have to do it the next year, and you don't get any credit if you have already done it. So I don't know how to factor that in, but I'll throw it out there.
He has encouraged districts to be involved.
Jim, did you want to speak? Or ask a question. Okay. Thank you, Joe. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Appreciate your report. Let's go to Jonathan Wood, our county attorney.
Okay, I'm going to help pick up the pace. No report.
Questions for Jonathan? Thank you, John. All right, let's go to Rick Snyder. We're on pins and needles.
I'll pick up the pace, too.
He's our county director of finance.
You have a short report. Sales tax report should be in your folder. There's three pages. The first one is the March 2016 compared to 2017. The other one that looks just like it will be looking at the first quarter data. And then the last report, as I always give at the end of the quarter, is the historical report quarter by quarter. But we have good news to bring to you tonight. And the county's portion of sales tax distributions for March was up 11.48% compared to last year. I'm looking at that one where it says March at the top columns, and if you go to that middle section for county, line 6 and 7, you can see that we're up 11.48%. As of the end of March year-to-date, the distributions for the county's portion total $8,129,511 compared to $7,374,773 in 2016. This represents an increase of $754,738 year over year, or a 10.23% increase. And then if you turn to the quarter report, first quarter report, this is very similar, but the county's portion of sales tax distributions for the first quarter was up 10.23% compared to last year. And, of course, the year-to-date columns reflect the exact same information because the end of March and the end of the first quarter are the same identical figures. But I thought after bringing you three straight months of our best record months, January, February, and March, it seems like we have pulled out of the doldrums from the last year when we had, I believe it was seven very dismal months, and it wasn't until we saw some improvement at the end of the year that we were even able to come even close to budget for last year, and we did not even meet budget. But Joe is very glad to get this information. We just got it yesterday, so he can wrap this into his forecast model for the budget kickoff next week. I'm sure he'll have some interesting prognostications there on where he sees us going. But we did have these three very – this is the best first quarter for overall tax collections of record. It's the best first quarter for the city of Ithaca of record. It's the best first quarter for the towns and villages on record, and it's the best first quarter for just the county portion, our portion, on record. And I'll just try to keep it short by saying right off the top, I have no idea why. So don't ask me that question tonight.
So don't ask him, in other words.
The hands all went down. Did you see that?
Anna, did you have a question? Anna Kellis.
No, that.
She already got her answer.
The only thing that's been put out by the state on this matter has been that they've changed the distribution method, but we're supposed to be getting a heavier check at the beginning of the month and then a lighter check at the end of the month, but that still wouldn't change the quarterly information. In fact, it wouldn't even change the monthly information if you're just getting the monthly information on a more upfront basis. But I think it has to do with Joe's letter that went to the state that asked for an audit 3 months ago, because we've had three good months since that letter went out.
Got to write more letters,
Joe. All we said was we'd really like to understand what's happening.
And the state did say that we've had an increase, as you probably aware, in energy prices. And because of the energy prices going up and the demand of a fairly cold winter, they think that's what may be one of the underlying causes. But That's just one factor out of probably four or five others that I just do not know.
Thank you, Rick. That's encouraging anyway tonight. We've already had one, but are there any other resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Let's do the consent agenda. There are appointments to the advisory boards, out of Government Operations Committee, to the Library Board of Trustees, Leslie Daniels. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, to the Youth Services Board, Barbara Bauer Sadobnik, Peter Angie, and Gabriel Carrillo. Out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Planning Advisory Board, Leslie Schill. To the Environmental Management Council, Brian Eden. And we have some resolutions. Resolution A, that's off. Resolution B,
off.
Resolution C, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2017, authorizing an agreement with the town of Ulysses for the transfer of Tagannock Boulevard parcel that buffers the Black Diamond Trail. Resolution D, authorized out of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution C, authorizing 2017 Federal Transit Administration Section 5311 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit and Tompkins County. That's ID 6986.
Revised versions in your folder.
We're doing the revised version as adopted by committee. Resolution F, scheduling a public hearing for the grant administration of the New York State Community Development Block Grant Award for the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program 11. That's ID 6955.
Can I point of order there? Jonathan, I can't remember what you told me. Do I need to recuse myself? It's setting the public hearing.
Resolution.
You do not need to recuse yourself.
Okay. Resolution G, amendment of the 2017 Tompkins County budget to reflect appropriation for 2017-2018 budgets for the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council and authorization to implement the amendment. That's ID 6925. Resolution H, authorization to accept contributions in support of the Finger Lakes rideshare projects, Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Councils. That's ID 6933. From the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution I, award of spring... Resolution J, award of... Out of the Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution K, authorization to accept grant funds for technical support for the Health Home Care Management Program, Mental Health Department, and that's also as revised by committee... It's ID 6935. Resolution L, authorization to accept grant for Mobile Crisis Technical Support Mental Health Department, ID 6936. So let me see if I've got them. I think we took Resolution A, B, D, I, and J off. Is that correct? So... With the exception of those, does someone want to move the consent agenda? Rich John, seconded by Glenn Morey. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's adopted. Those are adopted. All right, we're going to go to standing committees. And we're going to start with the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. I have one resolution to move. And that would be budget adjustment to transfer of highway fund balance and amend the capital program Station Road Streams Restoration Project, Town of Danby, ID 6918. I so move.
Seconded by Dan. Discussion. Dooley.
I can't remember if it's in your red folders or not. I communicated with Jeff Smith about adding a whereas, clarifying that the money transferred is first instance funding and that we expect 50% back from New York State DEC. Is that in the red folder?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. So, okay.
So that has the suggested changes, Dooley.
It has suggested changes. I hope they're agreeable to you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are they friendly? Okay. Friendly the seconder? Dan? Friendly? Okay. All right. Ready to vote on this one? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Roll call.
Sorry. Oh, she says I got to have a short form or long form?
Short form.
Short form roll call.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Okay. And in addition to that, committee met about a week ago, and the main thing that we discussed was the capital projects at the highway department. We had a review of those projects, and that's my report.
Questions for Dave? Thank you, Dave.
Well, I have
Dooley?
A kind of question.
Okay.
Will those
give you a kind of an answer?
Yes. Will the capital project details be part of the budget retreat? I don't know if it's for Dave or Joe.
No. Just the bottom line appropriation.
All right.
We have agreed, though, that we'll do in advance. We'll bring the draft to committee, and that before the formal budget presentation is done in September, we will have a briefing on what's in the detailed capital plan with the full legislature. So we've agreed to insert that in the process.
Thank you.
Dooley, if you'd like a copy of what was discussed at our meeting, I'll be glad to make one for you.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, Transportation Committee, we're having our field trip tomorrow. We're going to the Region 3 headquarters in Syracuse to talk about potential projects, and we're taking most of the committee, our planning director, our county administrator, and our MPO director are all going. And we're also having a Transportation Committee meeting. We'll be doing that after. I don't see it on my book here.
Next.
When is that?
24th.
On the 24th.
April 24th.
Yep. And we'll probably be doing a postmortem of our trip. Questions? Martha.
What are you going to do there?
Well, who are you meeting with? What's the...
We're going to meet with the regional director and his staff. We sent out a number of questions to talk about things like Route 13, Route 96, Route 38, some different issues that have come up. Freeville had some questions with their new bridge project that they're going to have over there. We're going to talk about, what else, Joe?
The relocation of the DOT waterfront facility.
DOT relocation.
And I think Route 366 through Varna is on a list to be redone soon.
Yeah, well, we're certainly going to talk about 366 and 13 and the overlap over there. And the county plans to look at development in the NYSEG area and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, before you get to 13 and 366 right in the middle of Varna, I thought was going to be, is on the list to be done soon.
You can ask about it.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you got your permission slips for your field trip signed.
Did you pack us lunch?
Cut the crusts off like you like. I had a couple of resolutions pulled, so I'll move those first. Start with Resolution A, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution authorizing an agreement with the Village of Freeville for the transfer of a Brooklyn Road parcel.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Questions, Dooley?
I pulled this in hopes of adding language with a little more description of what the project is and a hint of why we're doing it. It's a 0.98-acre Brooklyn Road floodplain parcel. And I checked with our county attorney to see if that was accurate and okay to do, and he saw no objection to it, so I hope you will find it acceptable.
Is that friendly?
Yes.
Friendly the seconder? Yes. Okay. So as amended, then. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay. I'd like to move Resolution B, authorizing an agreement with the Village of Freeville for the transfer of Brooklyn Road parcel that buffers Fall Creek.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslie. Discussion. Dooley?
I pulled this one also. You may remember that on the committee, at committee level or thereafter that meeting, I thought more about whether the resolution should include an explanation of why we are cutting the amount owed in half. And that's the amount we're asking the recipient municipality to pay. Again, I discussed this with the county attorney. He does not think it's necessary to have this in here, but he thinks that he suggested this is the best wording, the most economical wording to achieve what I wanted to include in the resolution. I hope you will find it friendly.
I do.
Friendly to seconder?
Yes.
All right, ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay, we also have Resolution D, authorizing an agreement with the town of Ulysses for the transfer of Taconic Boulevard parcel that buffers the Black Diamond Trail.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion, Dooley?
And I pulled this one for the same reason as Resolution B, and my explanation is the same as I just gave you for the previous resolution. I hope you find it friendly.
Yes.
Friendly second. Friendly to you, Carol?
Wait, what is the exact change you're going to make?
Adding.
Whereas the transfer of the parcel to village ownership serves a public purpose.
It was more complicated than that in committee. This was a particular serves a.
I guess is it not friendly?
Yes, sure.
As I said, the county attorney came up with the most economical wording possible. Mine was longer. Well, he doesn't recommend it, but that's what he said would be reasonable wording.
As amended, ready to vote? All those in favor?
Wait, no. Can I just say something?
Yes, Carol.
So, yeah, no. So the thing that's important to understand here is that. The town came with a particular appeal about why they needed to have this amount reduced that had to do with the long period of time they've been trying to negotiate with the state and that they're not anticipating carrying this forever, that they're hoping that their state will end up absorbing it. So I just don't want us to see this as setting a precedent that every time we're asked, we reduce amounts. It's, you know, this was a particular situation, and so it's fine that we're doing it this way, but for the, you know, it's not necessarily a precedent.
Point noted. Ready to vote? I'm sorry, Will?
So did I hear correctly that, Jonathan, you recommended against adding this language?
No, I didn't. Not because there was anything wrong with it. I just didn't feel it was particularly necessary, but there wasn't any harm in it either.
Thank you for clarifying that.
All right. On the resolution, all in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Dan, anything else?
Yeah, a quick report. At our meeting on April 5th, we spoke about a number of things. We had a presentation from the assessment department, offering us a whole menu of possible tax exemptions that can be given under various circumstances to promote the kind of development we want to see. There's a lot of information. We didn't take any action. We're going to continue that discussion next time. We had a presentation from Maureen Reynolds, our county clerk, about the electronic document program, basically digitizing the records. She told us that they've digitized and shredded 9,000 boxes of paper, which is yay for her, yay for us. We had a discussion about public Wi-Fi internet access in county buildings, and we're kind of zeroing in on some ideas, and I hope to have a resolution for the next GO meeting that we may act on, and it may come here as soon as 2 weeks after that. And then we also had a presentation about the performance measurement system for the county, for county programs. So we heard some information, we had some discussion, and it's going to come back to us at the next GO meeting, and probably we'll vote on the resolution then, and it'll get passed to the full legislature. The next meeting is Wednesday, May 3rd, 3:30, right here. The only other item that I haven't already mentioned is I'm going to have Greg Potter from Information Technology Services here. He's going to make a couple of quick presentations about the 2020 census. It's already starting, sort of. The first step is that we make sure that we have a database that contains an accurate representation of all the residences in the county. And if we do a good job with that, we can present that to the Census Bureau, and that's the program that they will use, and that way we'll get an accurate count, which is important on a lot of levels. And then also while Greg Potter is there, he's going to talk to us a little bit about the intranet, which is our internal system where we can access, I guess, forms and such. I don't really know what the intranet is, so I will find out. That's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Dan.
Oh, wait. Can I say something there? So I was one of our, I think we had two representatives to the sort of committee of people in the county who were trying to ensure that we achieved a full count for the last census. And it was surprisingly complicated. There was a surprising number of people around the table. So I think people should be thinking about whether they're willing to serve, because it's very important that we do it and that we think of all of the ways to make sure we get to everybody and are counting everybody.
Yeah.
Federal money, among other things, money depends on it for the next decade.
And I could say that, you know, Greg Potter was involved last time, and it's related to redistricting, and he's already, so he has a lot of head start in this. He says we're further along than most counties, and yes, stay tuned, but there's that right now, it's just proceeding well.
I read an article today where there's some dishevel at the federal level about whether they're going to let or give the census department enough money to do some of the online questioning and information gathering that they want to do. So that's a lot. You're exactly right, Carol. There's a lot up in the air right now. Okay, let's go to Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is chair.
Thank you, Mike. I think all my resolutions on the consent went through, right?
Yes.
Okay. The one that was the TCAT funding, TCAT and Way to Go funding, we had a special meeting this afternoon at which we reviewed this. The deadlines were very tight with Dwight Mengel between when he had the information and we had, and he has to have our resolutions. So thanks for passing that on. We had a good conversation about how the requests are kind of developed and vetted, and it's a mix of kind of allocations set by the state, TCAT priorities, and then fulfilling our contract with Way to Go. And we're going to have a presentation. I'm going to ask for a presentation by Way to Go. I mean, we haven't had enough interaction with them at the committee level. We'll try to, I guess, schedule that coming up. Our sort of more meaningful meeting, or I don't mean that, more fuller meeting was, regular meeting was April 6th. We had Joan Jerkowitz did a run through of the renewable energy presentation that she had done with municipalities, and it was very helpful. We had Ken Schlatter gave a very interesting discussion of things he's up to and Cooperative Extension is up to. We got a sort of summary of findings for the energy focus areas study. This is the study that we did with a couple of consultants co-funded with TCAD about four different development focus areas in the county. Do we have enough infrastructure and available supply for electricity and natural gas if for the development that is proposed and expected on South Hill, East Hill, kind of around the PNC, downtown Ithaca, and the airport area. The answer from the study came back, and I think Ed has mentioned this before, that for electricity, all of those four development areas are just fine. For natural gas, the only constraint area under constraint is the Village of Lansing airport area. No secret to anybody, but they also did, and the final report is being finished. It'll come out in a month or two, so this is just sort of an update. But one area of interest was to ask if we had targeted energy efficiency within existing buildings, really pushed efficiency, would we be able to free up capacity of the natural gas infrastructure to serve new demand. If we're able to, in some areas, reduce demand for gas, would that free up supply where industrial functions really need gas? And the answer is applying, you know, if we just look at the residential load in just the Village of Lansing, you could do enough conservation to meet moderate growth demand for natural gas in the airport area. It would fall short of the full build-out, but kind of at a first level of, you know, investment in efficiencies, you could do that. They did say that there's also a lot of interest in, of course, heat pumps and whether those are really actually efficient and adequate for most and cost effective for most applications. And it seems that and that information is still being worked on, but it looks very promising that most construction really could be done on a cost-effective basis. The technology has really improved, and the market has really expanded. So that full report will be coming. We talked just to quickly summarize a couple of other things. The Energy Navigator, where we put in $50,000 a year for each of 3 years, hoping that we'd bring funding from the Park Foundation and from TCAD to fill out the full-time salary. The Park Foundation has not funded it. They decided not to. They felt they wanted to see some additional information. It's something that we'll go back to and perhaps work with TCAD and try to make that function work and figure it out another way. The Energy Task Force met once, and they're working on the meeting schedule to try to get 24 people in the room at the same time. And we talked about the Biggs property, the land near, you know, that has been on the market for a year or so, Joe, and not gotten any bites. So the idea is to come back perhaps with a combination of a photovoltaic installation on part of the land and then proposal for housing, a more compact housing project, sort of eco-village kind of, the eco-village common house. I think 4 stories, something that's very compact and energy efficient. I mean, eco-village actually built this as a net zero apartment building. And so the idea was perhaps put 2 or 3 of those kinds of buildings on that site. So really cluster development in a more compact way, leave the wetlands undisturbed. So there is some interest in pursuing that. So that was kind of the first time the committee really discussed that. So I'm sure you'll hear more about that. Our next meeting is May 4th at 3 o'clock.
And questions? Dan?
So you just said it's very preliminary, and maybe that's the whole answer. But this concept of this, is it something the county would be drawing up, or are we going to look for a developer to make proposals? Do we know yet what the plan might look like?
You have something to add to that? Because I don't think I have an answer specifically but.
And kind of the preface to all this is a lot of interaction with the neighbors before anything went forward. But we would, if it's the residential project, we would try to find a developer to do that. Issue an RFP, something like that, to find a developer.
But there are a number of neighbors there, and one of them actually came to the microphone and said he had some land he wanted to swap and do a thing, and so he left with Ed at the end of the meeting. I thought that was all that needed to happen. So sort of the beginning of the conversation. But sort of the news here is the contract with the realtor is over, and we're not going to re-up at this point. But that doesn't mean the planning department is not going to do anything with it and let it sit there. They're working on another idea.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Did both of those resolutions get pulled?
I and J.
I and J.
Yeah, I just need to recuse myself.
Award of Spring 2017 New Tourism Initiative grants, and this is 6971, and this was resolution I, and I would move that.
Seconded by Leslin, I guess. Trying to see whose hand was up first. Mike.
I just need to recuse myself from both of these. They're both marketing money, and my job at Park, I would like to go after some of that. So.
Permission granted.
Thanks.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention, Mike Sigler.
Moving on, Resolution J, 2017, Tourism Project Grants, ID number 6972, and I would move that.
Seconded by Carol. Discussion? Same thing here, Mike?
Yes, please.
All right. All in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention. Okay. Jim?
Can I ask a question about one of those? The Ithaca Underground, the Naked Noise. Tell us, that's a new one. I mean, all of these new tourism grants are new, but the whole concept is not one.
I'm informed on it.
Jim?
I have no idea.
We have a gentleman offering to speak about it.
I welcome him to the microphone.
Tom did give us some information.
The Ithaca Underground is a collective of musicians in the city of Ithaca and the surrounding areas that puts on a number of projects to... I don't know what the right word is, but to promote one another, all sorts of different styles of music. The Naked Noise Project, I think this is 10 or 11 concerts running, is something they do twice a year at the Community School of Music and Art. They have a number of these different musicians gathered together, basically playing different music, improvising at the same time, while the audience walks among them. So at any point you might be hearing, let's say, a string quartet, someone playing an assortment of synthesizers, three drummers on kits, an electric guitar, a trio of vocalists. It's the general idea of Naked Noise.
Thank you for that information.
Yes, thank you.
No, they're not naked. It's just pure sounds. It's just pure music.
I don't really know if I can fund it then.
Sounds wrong.
All right, we already voted on this.
It's not going to be Bach, I guess.
Pushing money towards that.
Jim, I think you've got resolution N next.
I do. Or did that pass? No. All right.
That's on the regular agenda.
Award of Spring 2017 Tourism Marketing and Advertising.
Yeah, I'll move it.
Award of Spring 2017 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants.
Yes, and I will move that. It's 6937A.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Then I think you also have P, don't you?
Yeah, I have O and P. Or no, I'm sorry. One of those passed. Appropriation from contingent fund, memorial celebrations for veterans, memorial flags, and I would move that.
There's a second. Seconded by Glenn. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Up, short form roll call.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Anything else, Jim?
No, Joe mentioned the event on Tuesday, and next month's meeting we're going to have Tom Knipe and people from STPB to give us a discussion of the whole process of how room tax money is spent. And it's kind of a review that might have been encouraged by members of the committee, and I think it's probably time to do that. It's been a while since we talked about it.
Questions for Jim. I've got Will, then Martha.
Jim, just at the budget retreat, I assume there will be food as there has been in years past and donations taken. Is it?
I'm sorry?
For the budget retreat. Am I, as in years past, there will be food and
you
will
right.
pass the hat, basically.
I think it was in the email. Yeah, there will be.
Right. Thank you.
And there will be a collection given to the county administrator. Probably he'll be fronting the money on that. Martha, you had a question?
Yeah, that was what Will's question really was, not like was he going to starve by being at the retreat for a few hours without food. Am I right?
That's
right. Tom Knight has done a really great job about Airbnb, and I was at a meeting of the chamber on last Thursday morning where it was a big topic of discussion, a legislative breakfast, and Will and Dan were there, right? Dan and somebody else. Mike was there. Has the committee talked about Airbnb much?
Not recently. I think the last time I heard a discussion about Airbnb was, and I'm not sure it wasn't this committee, it was a planning committee, I believe.
Okay.
Because they used to report to planning.
Right. So I guess I would say I think it's an important issue, and I would, if you want to have it in budget, that's great,
yeah.
Or I would
have
him come to
whatever.
To PDAC. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Let me make one further comment. I was called today by a local media person who's doing a story about all of this, and they asked me when room tax began. Does anyone know in the room?
Yeah, early 90s.
What year?
89?
Close.
87?
86. That's amazing that it's been in that business that long, and it was started by Stuart Stein, Barbara Mink, many other people, but in 1986. And actually, as I researched it, I heard that you, Carol Chalk, were involved. It was some of that back then. And what you were doing, were you working for the city at the time? Or were you?
No, I was on the Strategic Tourism Advisory Board, but it wasn't from the very beginning. It was maybe
okay.
Shortly.
It was early time.
Let's go on.
Anyway.
Leslin has a question.
Yeah.
I did. Jim, we're having Tom come because over the last few meetings we've had lots of discussion from folks about how monies are distributed and decided and so on.
Right.
And so I'd like to suggest that if there are members of the legislature not on budget who have ideas, if there's some direction or looking to sort of give to encourage people to be at the meeting or share their thoughts and ideas with the rest of us who are in the committee so that we can have an engaged discussion with the members of the SDPB and Tom for going forward.
Thank you.
So what's the date and time that you said?
Second Monday of May.
May 8th.
I have nothing. I don't know if I can do it under this or not, but I will. I have made some mentions of IDA projects in the past few months, few meetings. We actually voted the other day on the City Center project for downtown Ithaca on the former tree block, and it doesn't disturb me, but it does concern me when I hear people come to the microphone and talk about giveaway, that we're giving money away to this and that, and we can't afford to do this because we're doing tax abatements to companies like the Vestal Company. And it's a very difficult thing for sometimes people to understand that it's always new money that we're talking about. And this piece of property is valued by Jay at a certain level. This piece of property, when the completion of the project, it's a $52 million project. Yes, they are getting a break in their assessment numbers for the first 7 or 8 years of the project. But at the end of that time, it is, valued at what it's valued at. And right now it's starting out as a $52 million project. And, in fact, they are paying taxes. It's a payment in lieu of taxes. So that's a big-time project. And we had you know, they've done a pretty good job. They've shortened the building. They put $5 million worth of underground parking in a place they didn't need to do parking. And, you know, I think it's going to be a welcome addition for the city of Ithaca at that end of the common. So, the other things that we did at the IDA was send the two solar projects toward Dryden for the public hearing, and we approved one for Newfield or Enfield. And so the IDA is sort of in the solar business to a certain degree. And, you know, Martha being a member, Will being a member, Rich being a member, you get the feeling sometimes that people want to say to the IDA, well, we don't like this project. We think you should reject it because of issues that are going on in their towns. We don't have that kind of control. What we have is the ability to further renewable energy projects in the county. And I think that's a goal that all 14 of us have here, that we've said it over and over again, and we're making it our best effort to do those kinds of things. So, oh, I dropped my microphone if I had one. But
I heard it, man. I heard it. Just a quick clarification. I know that they were going through a lot of changes for the Center City project. On the first floor, they had a gym and they had some commercial space, and that was the one controversy that a lot of people wanted all commercial space. Did they discuss that? Did you see?
No, they did not. My sense is that it made it through CTAP, so all those kind of issues probably were dealt with over there. What we were dealing with is a strict tax abatement issue and not so much about the look of the building and all of that. So.
Will?
Jim, I'm sorry if you've mentioned this before, but one of the issues that we were talking about relating to the solar projects has to do with the way the money is shared with the towns. And there was a new idea that was brought forth, I'm sure Martha could talk at a greater length on, that we are considering, but it's complicated in terms of potentially giving towns the county share. So.
No.
I chose not to talk about that.
And I knew that Martha could talk better.
Yeah, not the county share.
Right.
But to split it in a different way, but it has to do with...
We've gone away from... They've gone away from talking about splitting the county share in a way. There's another way that the town of Dryden is looking at gaining revenue out of the pilot agreement.
I just want to point out we still got five more committees to get through.
All right.
Carol.
Can you just tell us a little bit more about what the objections are, what the issues were over the tax abatements for the solar projects?
I'd rather not, but, you know, let me...
Tell me later.
I will talk to you later. There's more objections about the project than there are about the objections of what we normally do. We have a constant ratio. It's based on the property tax level of each town and municipality, and that's what we, you know, that's a small part of it. It's bigger what's going on out there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go on to Jail Study Committee. Rich John, if there's anything left to talk about, is there tonight?
I was going to ask if anybody was aware we have a Jail Study Committee. The committee has not met but is scheduled to meet this Thursday. And I think we've got a good meeting lined up. We are going to get a report from CGR. They're going to appear by video link and give us some sense of status of their investigation or their process. And then we also have some visitors coming in to talk to us, the different people who are interacting with the inmates now. I believe we're going to have somebody from AA, at least one person, perhaps NA, the person that runs the GED program at the jail. And they're each going to come in and just give us a brief report on what they're doing and what they see in terms of the jail facilities. Any questions?
Oh.
Carol?
On this one, the suggestion was made during public comment to put the that task force report, the municipal courts, whatever, the task force report that we had gotten a few years ago online. What was the name of the report? I don't know.
In the
here.
Municipal Courts Task Force?
Courts Task Force report. I thought that was a good report. And
no, that was Rich Dunbar suggested that, and yeah. I thought it was a good suggestion. And sure, we'll put it on the
website. I don't know if the right place for it is as opposed to somewhere else. But
you could say it's like chicken soup. Can't hurt. You know, it's a good report. And it does, there are suggestions in there that would impact our thinking about the jail. I think everybody on the committee has read the report, but others would be interested. So it's a good idea to have it out there.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday, 3:30 in the old jail. In the meantime, I do want to acknowledge and thank Greg Potter and the ITS staff and Joan Jerkowitz from planning for being the organizing committee for the spring workforce reading and discussion program, which begins next Thursday, 4 Thursdays in a row. And the location is the Office for the Aging, so thank you, Office for the Aging, for hosting as a location. These discussions are being facilitated by Barry Durfel, who is the Assistant Superintendent for Instruction for BOCES. And the topic of discussion, or the subject, is poverty is not a culture. Session participants will talk about the diverse dimensions of poverty, the relationship between culture and poverty, and the stigma of poverty and its social consequences. So thanks again to everyone who are participating, and we do want to encourage more of our employees. As always, I want to encourage all of you, if you have the time, 90 minutes on a Thursday afternoon, to join in these sessions. It's best if you go to all of them, and it's a great way to discuss issues of diversity and inclusion. We also do want to, make a special shout out to Shortstop Deli that provides refreshments for these sessions. And yes, there's refreshments. We do things the right way, man. You're going to have that sort of deep discussion. You got to feed the soul, Carol, and the belly. I also want to remind you that about the Diversity Consortium Roundtable. It's still early bird registration, I think through the end of this week might be, if not some point next week, at $65 per person for an entire day of really great workshops, discussion, and learning around issues of culture, diversity, and inclusion, and cultural competency. After whatever the date is, which I don't remember, I apologize for that. I think it's $85. So please try to sign up. And Tompkins County is a partner with the Diversity Consortium Roundtable. We have a seat at the table, and so we're involved in planning this event, which happens every 2 years. That's all I got.
Questions?
Somebody believes I'm hungry. Thank you for sending me some tricks.
Everybody's making us hungry tonight. Old Library Committee, we have not met. Questions on that? Public Safety Committee, Rich John?
We have not met since the last legislative meeting. We were scheduled to meet on this Thursday at 3:30. I am hoping we'll have a presentation on LEED and the project that's going on with the city to put that program into place. LEED is the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, which is a different approach to dealing with a certain class of low-level crime. particularly related to drugs, and to try to divert the people into counseling instead of the jail.
Questions? Rich, I think that's a good example of something that was in that report that came out of the court task force that we're moving ahead with. Most of the things that were recommended in that report are in some status of moving forward.
True. Thank you, Mike.
Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis is the chair.
I'm going to start with the fact that the next meeting is May 15th at 4:30 p.m. That is a Monday. Otherwise, I will forget to say it. We had a wonderful meeting of presentations. The first one was the new executive director of FoodNet Meals on Wheels, and that was Jessica Goza. And she started out by giving
Could you say that name again? I didn't catch the last name.
Jessica Goza.
Goza.
Uh-huh. But she started out by giving us an introduction to herself. Mm-hmm. And the context was because she recognized she was filling some really big shoes from a director who had initiated that program here and had been the director of that program for decades. And she wanted to share with us her personal connection and why it was so important to her. And I walked away feeling very confident in her dedication. She had been working with Family and Children's in the geriatric population for 7 years. Then she went into consulting for many years, trying to get experience that she felt would help her become a strong administrator, waiting for many years for a position to open up of an executive director position that she felt would fit with her. And when she found out about FoodNet, that to her was a perfect fit because she had been dedicating her entire adult career volunteering with the geriatric population. So I felt very, very positive and confident in her abilities after her presentation. She gave us some statistics of the work that Meals on Wheels does that I also found very helpful. Every meal is delivered with a safety check, which I did not know. That is a very cursory check of the situation, an individual, the environment, that they're okay. And so there was a discussion of that being actually a very important social connection. So it's not just about food, and that was very important. There are 4 congregate food sites for the social impact of it. There are 163,000 meals that were served in 2016, and all of the food is made locally in their kitchen. And I thought that was quite amazing. So it's 5 days a week of hot food, and then 2 days, the weekend days, are frozen food that is still made there locally, and they also make food in the holidays, for the holidays. They provide nutrition education and counseling with a registered dietitian, and that's over, last year they provided over 500 hours of counseling and education. And over 50% of the people in their program live below the poverty line. And that was a statistic that was, I thought, very important. The qualifications are income is one of the qualifications, and being above 60, and also having some sort of disability that they can't do preparation, food preparation, cooking, purchasing. Those things were very important. And about 66% of their funding comes from government funding, federal funding, 16% charitable contributions, and 18% from participants. And a little bit of that includes managed Medicaid. So why am I bringing all of this up? It's particularly the funding sources, and I will hearken back to the 66% coming from government funding. First, I wanted to show you why I think they're so great, which a lot of you already know, and that they provide an incredible service to our community in the whole county. To say that Lisa Holmes, the director of Office of the Aging, had been given a promise from the state that the funding that they get
and that she brought to us during budget season specifically for the pocket to ensure that she can provide the living wage for staff, like Meals on Wheels staff. They were ensured that that would not be cut, and when the budget came out, they found out that it actually was cut. So last year, if you remember, during budget season, she had asked for an OTR, and then she pulled that OTR for about $12,000. So they are already well into their budget year because Meals on Wheels works on a calendar year. So this is a budget. The budget that we approved in November is what they've been working with. Which means that Lisa will probably be coming to us with a request for contingency funding to uphold at least the level that we approved for this year. And that will probably be somewhere around $19,000. And that loss of funding is from the current budget cuts that were recommended. So I'm not 100% sure. Joa, you can confirm for me. This is a state pocket of money, correct? Or this was from the federal cuts for HHS that are proposed?
This is state.
So the other piece that she mentioned is that they are, because 66% of their funding comes from government funding, it's very unclear what the impact of a third of a cut to HHS at the federal level budget cut is going to mean for Office of the Aging and programs specifically like Meals on Wheels. So stay tuned to find out what impact that has on all of the programs of the Office of the Aging. Joe, did you have anything to add to that? The other piece that we discussed was continuum of care through the Human Services Coalition. And we, in our budget last year, put $50,000 aside for the HSC and continuum of care specifically to use for homelessness, housing and homelessness. And they presented the RFP that they have now put out. So they did a meeting with all of the members of COC and collected ideas of how this money could be used. And then everybody voted on those ideas, similar to the retreat that we did on housing. They picked the top ideas, and those became part of the RFP that they put together. And so now they have put this RFP out to nonprofits in the community, and that is open until May 12th, with decisions being made by May 30th of creative ways to use this funding to address the housing crisis. And that can be things like subsidized rent, renovation of homes that currently don't meet code, education. So there was a TC action survey that was done that found that landlords don't fully, there are many landlords that don't fully know exactly what Section 8 vouchers are, how they're used, all of the issues related to them. So there is some room for education that could also have a great impact on the availability of housing, and that's a possibility for some of this. So that was our other major discussion. And if anybody, that's my report, if anybody has any other things to add from HHS. So I will see people on May 15th.
Thank you, Anna.
Yep.
Take the minutes. April 4th, moved by Rich, seconded by Dan. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed. Any unfinished business? Jim?
One comment, very short. Dave and I both serve on soil and water, and I should have done this under budget. You all remember when we were in the furrow 3 or 4 years ago, and we like to use those words in soil and water? And it was in the neighborhood of $280,000, and we are now $38,000 from moving to the black in that. And through the work of John Nagley and all those people on that staff over there, every time I walk in the building, I feel old. But it's, well, I feel old all the time. But at any rate, it's a great staff. They are working very hard, and they've done a wonderful job in bringing back soil and water to the place it should be in Tompkins County. And that's all.
Okay, anything else? I'll take a motion to adjourn. I see Will's hand way up. Seconded by Dan. All in favor? Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you all. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Jim Blizzard. Thank you, Marcia.